Acme is making your grocery shopping easier than ever. Download the Acme mobile app to find digital deals, earn reward points, or shop for delivery or pickup. Acme, fresh foods, local flavors.
93.3 WMMR, audio on demand, presents the Preston and Steve Show podcast.
A guest in the studio, and we've had the pleasure of speaking to him before, and you remember him from some fantastic movies. I mean, you know, Sling Blade, obviously.
Phenomenal.
Armageddon, The Monsters Ball, Love Actually. In fact, we have a clip I'd like to play from one of our favorite movies that he stars in. Is this ready to go?
Yeah.
Okay, here we go.
Santa!
Yeah?
You're bringing my present early?
No.
But I never told you what I wanted.
I said I didn't bring it, dish.
Okay, good. I want a stuffed elephant. A pink one.
Well, wish in one hand, in the other one. See which one fills up first.
Ladies and gentlemen, Billy Bob Thornton is here. Good morning, Billy.
Hey, guys.
How you doing today, man?
How's tricks?
That is my all-time favorite movie. Whenever anybody asks me, you know, what's your favorite movie, that hands down.
You have
is
it
my,
listed.
That,
yeah, Bad
it's
Santa.
It's listed as my favorite movie ever. It is
well, you know, they started, a lot of people have it on there. They'll ask, what are your favorite Christmas movies? And people will list their top three or something like that, and it's like it's a Wonderful Life and the right. Christmas Story and Bad Santa. But they're serious.
Yeah, you know? Yeah. It is. Yeah, it's just not the holidays.
Looks kind of odd up next to those other movies.
Well, you're in town. You're promoting a film which is called The Astronaut Farmer, and also along with you, we have the director and writers of the film, the Polish brothers. It's Mike Polish and Mark Polish who are here as well.
You guys,
we'll
give
them some love. You guys had a screening of it last night or a question and answer session?
Yeah.
Was it both or was it one?
Well, it's those things are always kind of odd, you know.
Yeah,
but we had a screening and a question and answer thing, and I don't know. It's just
are they always insightful questions or are they?
Well, here's what happens: you go in there and everybody's like, "Oh wow, look, the guys from the movie are here," and it's exciting for about 30 seconds, and it went great. I mean, the people loved the movie.
Yeah.
It was really nice. But then when the questions start. It's like sometimes it's like somebody just hits you in the head with a hammer because you don't know what to say, you know.
Right.
Like,
welcome to our world.
Right.
Yeah.
And then I don't know how you guys do it, but one way or the other, we had you know, mostly normal questions and good questions, but then every now and then somebody says something like, "So, why?" Like last night, why did you make the launch so fast?
Oh, man, that kills my question.
It was pissing us off, frankly.
Right?
It seemed to be far too quick.
And it's like, you know, of course, right away, it's like film student.
Right, yeah.
I got you.
Well, you know, because he's trying to help your career. He feels as he's there with the milk dud stuck to his fingers, he can help you.
That's right.
And improve your career.
Do people at least try to stay within the context of the film, or do they start asking you about your personal life and that stuff as well?
Well, you know, fortunately, last night it was all about the movie, and it was actually a really good screening. People were great, and this one went okay. Every now and then, you'll get somebody who says, you know, is it true that you're half dragon or whatever?
You get the half dragon, do you?
Yeah, sometimes.
I mean, do you not like that? You mean, because people see you, you know, in all these movies, and they kind of want to know the real you. Do you not like to talk about your personal life?
Well, I don't mind. You know, it's not that bad.
No, you have a. We talked before. Your track record is. We would all like to walk in your shoes. You've had some fine living there.
It ain't the shoes.
No, it's all good. Well, the movie looks, you know, phenomenal.
Cool.
We had a charity a function that we were making good on last night. We would love to have been there and seen it. But we've looked at a lot of clips, and it definitely seems to have a very strong Field of Dreams. You know, you need a movie like this to come out every couple of years so that, you know, people have something to go and enjoy and feel good about. Is that what drew you to the project?
Yeah, absolutely. It was I've told people that I always wanted to do my Jimmy Stewart Mr. Smith Goes to Washington,
right?
Movie, you know, and that's
were you
that's
a Capper fan or,
fan, and this movie really has that classic story of those 40s movies, and yet it's in a contemporary setting. And Field of Dreams is actually a good call. all. That's it has that kind of feeling. And you know, I normally don't do movies that the whole family can see.
And, that's an understatement.
All right.
Yeah.
And this one is. I mean, you know, with the test screenings and everything, it was like everything from kids to elderly people really loved the movie. It's got a Hoosiers kind of feeling to it also. Oh, wow. You know, and it's really a terrific movie, I think.
Well, I want to know what compelled Mike and Mark to write this story, and you know,
and does
where
it,
it comes from. Yeah.
Does it play off of a real story?
We really just wanted to build a rocket.
It's really simple. If you could explain the plot to those who may not be familiar.
It's about a man who decides that, you know, after his NASA training, he had to go home because of family circumstances and didn't give up the dream of building going into space. So he was close to making it
and had to sort of dash his dreams.
Yeah, he go home and work the ranch. And
right.
So he came back and built the Mercury Atlas rocket.
I'd remember seeing stories in the past of people who have attempted to build backyard rockets. Did you draw on them for any, you know,
inspiration for a story?
Well, if they failed, we didn't know about them.
Yes. There's no way of... He didn't do that quite right. Yeah.
We might see a bunch of launches coming up.
Really?
Yeah.
You think so?
Yeah.
But there was that really bad Andy Griffith TV show called Salvage. Do you remember
Christ,
that? Do you remember that?
About that? No, we've been here. We should make a movie about that.
Oh, yes. It was terrible.
Salvage.
Was back in the 70s.
When you're doing that, do Mayberry RFD the movie, too. It would be awesome.
Cop Rock.
Ken Berry's.
Cop Rock the movie, yeah.
Sure. Was this in conjunction with NASA until you make sure that you get the technical stuff correct while you were writing?
We were able
film?
To get the blueprints,
yeah,
but without the certified stamp,
right? Yeah.
Approval,
no,
sort of the no frills version of a rocket. Yeah,
Billy, did you do anything go to a space camp or anything to prepare for it?
No, I had done Armageddon about 10 years ago.
Love
and
it.
I did quite a bit of research for that because all my dialogue in that movie was very technical, so
right.
I had to learn what I was talking about. So, and I talked to a lot of NASA people at that time, you know, and so for this movie, I didn't really need to do as much research. And plus the guys, Mike and Mark, they knew so much about it that if I needed to know anything, I could ask them.
Okay. What impresses me is how you can play, and you play so very well the sociopath, and you play this, and in this movie you're very you come across, you do a warm, sensitive sort of guy character well, which is closer to your real day to day experience.
Actually, probably the astronaut farmer.
Okay,
I've been around a lot of sociopaths, but those are fun to play.
You get a kick out of that.
Oh,
you can tell you're enjoying that when you're playing that kind of character.
Yeah, no doubt about it. I mean, it's always fun to play things that you can't really do in regular life.
Yeah, well, but you want to do.
Right. I mean, I did, for Bad Santa, I did troll around the big and tall women's section. that type of research.
You wanted to pee your pants, for real, did you not?
I wanted to pee my pants. They wouldn't let me. They said, well, then we'd only have the one take and everything. And I said, with as many beers as I've had this morning, we may have two or three takes.
In Bad Santa and then Sling Blade alike, you worked with two great kid actors. And there are so many movies out there where there are really bad kid actors. Is that, you know, they always say you never want to work with children and animals in Hollywood. But somehow you found two kids that are really great.
And not
movies.
Annoying.
Not like a Jake Lloyd in Phantom Menace.
Right.
You know, I mean, these kids were great.
Well, you're talking about the girls, an astronaut farmer?
Any of those. Do you build up a camaraderie with the kids, or are the parents initially like, that's Bad Santa, don't talk to him?
You know, it's incredible, especially in L.A., how much parents will let their kids do just to be on television or a movie.
I don't doubt it, yeah.
They don't care at all. I mean, the kid in Bad Santa, I felt so bad for him because he's kind of like that, you know.
Really?
And I mean, he's real innocent,
yeah.
You know. And he did, you know. And I said to him, I got to hit you in the head,
right.
And, you know. Yeah. So I'm really sorry. I wasn't supposed to say that.
No problem.
But anyway, so
yeah, I was wondering that because you know. Regardless, the kid was sort of, you know, chunky and seemed to be sort of in line with his character. How you managed to get by with that.
Well, I felt kind of bad, but he said, oh, I know, it's just a movie, and his parents loved it, you know, and they were just happy to be there.
Yeah. Better hanging with you than at Neverland Ranch, right?
I guess so, yeah.
That's right. As we've sat here and talked, my computer screen is filled up with instant messages of people doing the Carl mm-hmm and that whole thing. You must get that all the time. Do people walk up? I mean, like, and you, it's like you want to turn around and go, hey, that's the first time I've heard that. You know? I'm sure you get that constantly, don't you?
That's always fun. Yeah. You know what it is? Like, let's say I'm at the mall, and I'm walking over to the tennis shoe store or
right,
whatever.
Yeah. And then, or the large lady section.
And some guy comes up. It happens all the time. Some guy comes up and he says, hey, dude, you have no idea, man. My uncle does an impression of you. It's so cool. You gotta hear it. First of all, they say an impression of me.
Right.
But I always know they mean the Sling Blade.
Right, yeah.
So, anyway, so they say, you should hear my uncle. I go, that's pretty cool. Well, tell your uncle I said hello. He's right over here at the corn dog stand. I'm going to go get him. Well, see, I'm codependent. So I'll stand there, and I wait like 15 minutes for this guy to go get his uncle. He brings the uncle back, and the uncle does some horrible impression of the Sling Blade character. And I go, oh, wow, that's really great. That's even better than I can do it or something like that. Then they want to make a picture.
Right, yeah.
Which is okay. I don't mind taking pictures of people, but they can never operate their camera.
It's true, yeah.
So you got to stand there while they all figure out how to operate the camera.
Right, yeah.
Yeah, anyway.
That's part of the deal. You know, I just have to mention, I loved, and we were talking about this as you were coming here, the special you did with Warren Zevon towards the end there was just phenomenal. And he's been a big part of WMMR as well. You know, you're working on that, I assume that's something you'll always cherish, you know, being a part of that towards the end.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, Warren and I were old friends, and he was a great guy. And actually, I was on his last record on
right.
the grid. I did background.
Which is a fantastic record.
Terrific record. And Warren was really amazing toward the end. He was pretty courageous. I don't know if the rest of us could be that way. And it was great. And being able to narrate the documentary and everything was a really cool thing. I was honored to do it.
I've heard reports, and they may be erroneous, that there's a film biography planned for him. Is that true, or is that just hearsay?
Actually, Crystal Zevon, who is his ex-wife, who was still really close with Warren, has written a book that Warren asked her to write.
Right.
And he said, you do it before somebody else does it. So she's written a book, and there's some talk about making a movie from it.
That'd be wild. Yeah.
Are you still continuing your music career? You do recording, yeah.
Yeah, we just finished a new record called Beautiful Door, and it comes out May 8th on Universal New Door.
Okay. Any music on the soundtrack?
They wouldn't let me.
Bastards.
We're having to do Rocket Man, but that was already done.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
Are you gonna tour support the CD?
Yeah, we'll do it probably sometime in the summer. I'm starting a movie in April. I got to finish that up first, and then probably tour in the summer.
Okay. Yeah. You know what? And I've got to pay this compliment, because sometimes a movie will be on cable, maybe passing through or on the channels, and you forget that that Billy Bob had played some of these small scene-stealing roles.
Yeah.
Like in The Apostle.
Yes.
Which was just amazing.
Phenomenal movie.
I didn't realize that was you until, I didn't see the movie until it came out, on cable and made the rounds. And also Tombstone. As well. Did you know that he is in Tombstone?
I didn't know. And I've seen that movie a couple times.
He's the guy that Kurt Russell comes over and says, you're sitting in my chair there, and he starts smacking him around.
There you go, that's right.
You were about 100 pounds heavier back then.
Wow.
Yeah. Well, not 100.
Yeah, you were a fat son of a bitch.
I know. Yeah, I, I gained that weight to do this movie U-Turn.
Oh, yeah.
And gaining it's quite a
fun.
Bit of fun.
Oh, yeah.
And boy, let me tell you, taking it off. As a matter of fact, I was losing the weight that I'd gained for those two or three movies in a row where I was at that weight. And, I figured I'm not going to do that anymore, like the whole De Niro thing.
Right,
to weight. But for U-Turn, it was really appropriate. And I was losing the weight during Primary Colors. So during that movie, if you look close, I'm like five different weights in there. I was actually losing weight.
Well, you had some health problems because of that, didn't you?
Well, I would get horrible migraine headaches and a lot of indigestion, and then I got a kidney stone, but I don't know what that was from.
I just would assume the gas would be a problem.
Yeah, well, exactly.
Well, the film, Steve, kind of drew some parallels to Field of Dreams.
This is my kind of movie, and I'm a huge fan of Capra, and this has that. It seems just, you know, you as I said, you need a movie like this to come out every couple of years just to make everyone feel good a bit, you know, so.
Inspirational.
Looks great.
Cool. Well, thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
For being here. We appreciate it. Mike Polish and Mark Polish, writers and director, and, of course, the star, Mr. Billy Bob Thornton.
Yeah!
All right, my friends, we're going to take a break. We will come back in just a moment.
Like the Preston and Steve Show podcast? Check out MMR's other audio on demand at WMMR.com or on the MMR mobile app.
Say goodbye to juggling paper coupons and missing out on the best deals. Download the Acme mobile app today to have your own personal grocery guru right in your pocket. Use it to plan your shopping list like a pro. Get personalized deals on the products you buy most and choose your shopping style. Whether it's in-store, delivery, or drive-up, where an experienced Acme associate will carefully select, bag your order, even pick up your prescriptions from the pharmacy, and bring it all right to your car. Acme. Fresh foods, local flavors.
Back with more of the Preston and Steve Show podcast.
Let us fantasize that tomorrow is it. Tomorrow's it. It's over.
Okay.
It's the beginning of Judgment Day. Casey, in particularly, had something he wanted to get off of his chest. And I think it might be kind of fun to do this as an experiment. Open up the phones and see if there's something you want to go ahead and confess to. You want to step up and be first?
I'll do it. I'll do it. You know what?
This has to do with 10 years ago and your housekeeper.
No, has nothing to do
with that. Was Arnold Schwarzenegger.
14 years ago. Okay. I know it's Arnold Schwarzenegger's.
Is Arnold Schwarzenegger?
Yeah. I don't even know what I was doing in his house. But
yeah. All I know is apparently my ass looked good to him. You got the nice tood cut of.
No, you know what? I've never told anybody about this, and it's, you know...
Is it embarrassing?
No, it's not embarrassing.
Do you want us to bring the lights down a little bit?
No. I did something that, you know, even at the time I wasn't proud of, and, you know, oh, man, all right, if I'm 35 now, this is like 20 years ago. I did this when I was 15. I used to sell newspapers outside of the church.
Yes.
And
Town Talk.
No, it was the Inquirer.
Oh, okay.
And, you know, during 10 o'clock mass, my friend and I who sold newspapers, we would go to this place called the coffee station for breakfast. Well, this particular morning, I didn't have any money, and I stole money out of the collection box.
Oh!
To go get breakfast.
I was going to joke and say you stole money out of the collection box.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Oh,
I think
my gosh.
You've mentioned something similar to this before about taking the newspaper money.
No. Somebody used to, well, and then I found out later on, and like, because we always came up short every single time we gave the money to the lady after 11:30 mass, we had to, you know, give all the money back, and we would always be short, and I had no idea. But like I said, we used to always go to breakfast, during the mass, and I found out during college that this guy Bill, he waited for us to leave, and he would take money from us.
Oh wow!
Yeah.
I thought you were going to bring up that thing about drowning the kid in the wheelchair.
No. I'm proud of that, Steve.
Wait, I'm shocked, though. Yeah. I can't believe you have done that.
You were Catholic school?
Yeah.
So, all right, so you did, and it, does it... Does a day go by where you don't think about it?
No, I mean, sometimes I don't, you know.
Yeah.
It's not something that sticks with me every day. But
How much did you take?
Like $10.
$42,000.
You know? No, it was like, I don't even remember how much
it was. Some people call it a collection plate. The church called it their safe.
How did you get it, Casey? Was it in like the basket or?
Well, they collect all the baskets and they put it in a big bin and then they put it in this thing. And, you know, I knew where they put it.
What church was this?
I'm the church that I went to. My whole life. I was just going to say,
why don't you go back and give that money back?
No, you're probably right. I should.
You know, and that'll make you feel better.
Confessing, I don't feel better. In fact, I feel like I'm going to be shunned.
You're still going.
I think you were a kid. You were a kid. You made a stupid mistake.
Yeah. But still, even to this day, like 35 years old, like I get so mad at myself. You know, like you know, I close my eyes, I'm like, I can't believe I did that.
Well, Preston, I think, has the absolute salient thing to do. Go back and replace that money. It'll make you feel a little bit better.
I wonder how mad my mom is at me right now.
She's probably happy that you're confessing that.
Right now she's screaming, I have no son.
All right, I have one. I was
is it on that level?
It's a little more intense.
Is it drowning a kid?
No. But it's something that I cringe when I think about. Something I did as a kid, and nothing bad happened, but something really bad could have happened. I was either in fourth or fifth grade. I think I was probably in fifth grade. And my sister's friend, Tammy, was over. And we had, growing up in my house, we hunted and stuff. So we had a lot of weapons around the home. We had a lot of guns. I had my own shotgun. I got that for a birthday present when I was in fifth grade. And I don't know why. I was a kid. I did this.
You'd ask for a light bright.
I was joking around, and I loaded the shotgun.
Oh, my God.
And I leveled it on Tammy's head.
What?
Oh, my God.
You held the shotgun to her head?
And I took the safety off. Whoa. And I was just joking around, and I had my finger on the trigger. And if one little slip would have happened, I would have killed her.
You would have blown her head right off.
I would have absolutely killed her. A loaded shotgun. Whoa. It was a 20-gauge. So
What was she doing? Was she scared, or was she like, oh, Preston, stop it?
Yeah, she just thought I was joking. She didn't know it was loaded. And I think back of that, and I physically cringe.
You
get
sick. I tighten
my fists, and my muscles tighten up, and I'm like, you stupid kid. What were you thinking?
Wow.
That could have destroyed your life, and you have no idea. I didn't have any idea at the time. You know, it took me a long time later to, you know how you forget a lot of things?
Right.
And they say that, you know, in therapy and stuff like that, things can flash back in an instant. It happened one day. I'm like, oh, my God, I did that one time.
So immediately afterwards, or even during, you had no regret?
Nah.
Wow.
I was joking around.
Yeah.
I didn't know.
You were going to
I didn't know that there could be irreversible consequences to that
that would destroy
lives and kill me. And it does haunt me. And I've never told anybody that.
So with your kids, I know you're a safety fanatic when it comes to the guns. You do all the absolute proper stuff. But I bet you that was fueled a little extra by that recollection.
Absolutely. That's why I keep, I have one.
Wow.
One shotgun shell in my house, and I know where it is. I do have a couple of guns, but I know where it is in case there's an emergency. It's where I can get to it quickly, but I'm so terrified of what might happen.
Wow.
And people use safes and things like that to lock it up. That's not enough for me. I just have one, and that's it. But it terrifies me. I'm embarrassed of it. I've never told anybody that.
Do you think Tammy remembers?
I was a kid. No, she probably doesn't.
But for you, that shows you, though, a lifetime of regret from something like that.
Have I just been heavy the past couple weeks?
Yes.
It's your midlife crisis.
I
think so.
Yeah.
Well, but Preston, you're right, because that exactly the story that you told happened to my cousin, and he did shoot somebody, and he was shot, and he was paralyzed for years and then eventually died. But they were playing with guns, and he was shooting at his friend, gave it to his friend. His friend was shooting at him, and that's what happened.
Yep.
So you're, that's,
and it was very hard to.
Oh man,
I've never told anybody, and it's the first time hearing.
There you go.
Wow.
Another feel
better. Remember, I told you guys I didn't have anything to share.
Yes, you did.
Yes, you found something
pretty heavy.
I have something.
Clear your conscience.
I remember saying to a friend, and I'll give his name in a second. I said, "You're all talk and no action," and that friend's name was Lee Harvey Oswald.
Stop it. All you do is talk.
Yeah, you talk a good game.
Yeah. Here's a couple more. While I was dating my now wife, I was banging an 18-year-old virgin and a 32-year-old MILF at my job while my girlfriend was hanging at my parents' house waiting for me to get home.
Whoa. It's a very relaxed job.
Here's another one. I stole over $5,000 from a donation fair over the course of 3 years. Not a highlight of my life when I was 16. This one says, I have to confess, I am the reason that Cinnabon in Montgomery Mall closed.
Oh, you son of a bitch.
We were stealing from the register and sales got so low, they closed it.
I love Cinnabon. It's my favorite reason to go to the airport.
Here's another one. Spit on my husband's pork chop before he ate it right after a fight. He deserved it.
Oh, yes. And I slept with Moses Malone.
Wow.
Marissa.
All right. Let's go to a few more calls. There's some good ones. And then we'll do a short beef aisle because our guest is in the green room waiting. But these are too good not to go to. Should I go to line five?
Go for it. I got to wrap my mind around this one.
Anonymous caller, you are on the air. Good morning.
Yes, mother effing gadzooks.
Gadzooks. Right.
Thank
this
you, sir.
This one has plagued me for years, and I have nightmares about it. When I was 18, my mother's friend's boyfriend asked me to help him throw some trash out, but I have a sneaky suspicion that it was a body. He wanted me to dig a hole in the woods with them and throw it in the ground. What? And when it felt squishy, it was very uncomfortable. It bent weird. And when the shoe fell out, that's when my suspicions got really bad.
Now, you're straight up about this, correct?
My chest, I'm like nervous. My chest is like tightened. I can't even. This is the first time I ever even talked about it. I haven't even told my wife about this, and I tell her everything.
All right, couple of questions. How many years ago was this?
When I was like 17, he gave me $100 to help him go do this, okay. And I'm like, it's trash. Well, we just throw in a dumpster, and he wouldn't explain to me, and it was $100. I was 17.
Yeah, no. How old are you now?
I'm 38.
Okay, so it was quite a while ago. Is this guy still in your life?
No, long gone.
All right,
he's
and
a very scummy character and everything.
Do you know? Do you know where this is?
Yeah. All I remember, he took me in the middle of the. I think it was the Pine Barrens because we rode towards the shore, I remember it was. I'm pretty sure it was the Pine Barrens because there's a lot of sand and pine trees, and it was just in the middle. It was like we did it in the black and almost in the black dark. You know.
Well, and let me ask you: at that age, that didn't raise any red flags to you? I mean,
I didn't really want to think of it because of the money.
Were you afraid of this dude?
Yeah. He was kind of creepy and stuff. And
dude, I would be 17 years old, and you're going off in the middle of nowhere, and you think you don't know what you're doing until you've done it, and then you're like, oh my god! And if this guy killed somebody, what would keep him from killing me?
He said he worked for construction, but it was kind of the waste management, if you get what I mean.
Yes, no, we do. Yeah.
Oh, okay. Was everything that you were throwing away, was it extremely heavy? And was it one bag? Was it multiple bags?
It was a rolled up piece of tarp and carpet.
Oh, my God.
Well, that's right out of the mafia hit. That's like Goodfellas.
Scared the hell out of me. I was like, and then, like I said, I almost crapped myself when I saw the shoe fall out of the.
I guess that wasn't the time to say, is this a body?
Right.
Come on.
I'm not exactly sure, but it just bent weird. And like I said, I thought it felt so squishy. The blood came through, but I don't know. It just that's my suspicion for years.
Well, let me tell you something.
It really actually haunted me for years.
Let me tell you something. I mean, you were in a bad situation there with if this guy was capable of killing someone and in fact had done that, then it was probably best that you just. Did what he asked you to do, but that's as freaky a story as I've ever heard.
This is almost a big release for me because I've never talked to anybody, anybody. I mean,
do you not even
when I was drunk or high or anything.
It's decades later, but do you think could approximate where it was?
No, because he just rode me down all these back roads. It made so many turns.
Right.
I couldn't even. I was like stunned to begin with. You know, I was like my heart was thumping, and I still have nightmares about it occasionally. You know.
How far was it from your house?
We at least rode like I'm going to say maybe an hour, 2 hours, couple hours.
I don't know if this. I don't know if this makes you feel any better, but I once voted for Clinton.
Wow, that is insane.
I would dime out this guy in a heartbeat if I ever could think about where the body could be. Because I remember we walked down a trail and it was real hard because of the sand and it was like really heavy. I'm like.
Well, dude,
he scared the crap out of me. To be honest,
it's really not that kind of bonding experience that you hope for.
What's the last landmark?
How come we never bury bodies, Dad?
What's the last landmark that you remember, man?
Something about the Cranston Memorial.
Case.
It was this thing about where this Japanese pilot did it. Kamikaze thing, he landed out in the Pine Barren. I don't know. It was some kind of, I remember it's some kind of like almost like a like a statue. And that's all I remember seeing that.
It'd be virtually impossible, especially, I mean, because it's everything. That's why that is the area where a lot of times, you know, people who are being deposited will be deposited out there. It's easy to get lost. There was a Sopranos episode where they were out in the Pine Barrens, got lost.
Yeah. I went out there and tried to remember just to see if I could possibly remember where, and not in a million years. I couldn't even find the Cranston Memorial thing. I couldn't find that either. And, and it was just,
It's beyond freaky. I don't think you're necessarily, in fact, I know you're not liable for that.
I feel horrible. I don't know. I mean, what if it was somebody, you know, some poor kid's father? I mean, I'm just.
Yeah. You were in a situation that would have appeared, that you would have been in a very precarious, very dangerous situation if the guy you're with had done that. I mean, there you go.
And if he ran in circles at you, insinuated, I don't think you did anything wrong. I absolve you. I'm not
you're okay.
A priest.
I'm not clergy. But
I am. I'm a minister of the Universal Life Church in Modesto, California, and I give you your
absolution. I feel bad for you, and I understand how that would bother you all these years. But really, dude, you know,
it was.
Matter of fact, I'm shaking about it talking to now. It's a release that I think I really needed for many, many years. And I just, you know, maybe the dreams will stop. I don't know.
Well, you were in a bad situation. Yeah. And
I mean, he was already dead.
Yeah.
You know, the guy that he buried.
Stop. Well, no, honestly, no. What could he have done?
Yeah. And if
you didn't kill the guy.
Yeah, right. And if the other guy had killed him, what if he decided you weren't helpful and he took you out?
Right.
Yeah, take one for yourself.
All right. Well, good luck, my friend. Yeah. I'm glad you were able to get it off your chest, okay?
Thank you. Thank you, guys. I appreciate this a lot.
All right. We'll see you later.
Between him and that other poor guy who was nailing his girlfriend's mother in the hot tub.
Shut up.
We could. You know what? I mean, the authorities could contact us on that. I mean, because there's no... If somebody was killed...
There's no statute of
limitations.
However, how would you even go about...
He's the Pine Barrens, man. You know, I mean, it's a wilderness.
There used to be in New York along the Bell Parkway. They were just miles of these almost the same sort of situation, and that's where the bodies would end up.
I was watching Taxi Cab Confessions last night on HBO, and this guy, he was a young kid, maybe 21, 22. He's talking about how he disposed of a body, and I'm like. This is on TV. You know, you're going to have to answer for this.
He had to sign. He had to sign a release.
Yeah, A from the mob and B from the police.
But it was HBO.
Yeah,
yeah. So it's a premium channel.
Let me go to a couple calls here. There's so much going on here. Let me go to Patrick. Hey, Patrick, how you doing?
Hey, how are you guys? Tornado!
Patrick, what's up, my friend?
Nothing. I know I'm going to burn in hell. I sold my soul for about $200 back. My fiance and I, a few years back, we're not together anymore, obviously, but my parents were at church on Sunday and went into their house, and I took my mother's wedding ring.
You took your mother's? Why?
Well, it's for drugs at that point.
Did you hawk it? Did you sell it?
Yeah.
For $200, he said.
Wow, man.
How much do you think that ring was actually worth that you got $200 for?
Well, you figure, based on, I guess, like the percentage that they give you, I think it was worth about $5,000, something like that.
And obviously never confessed. It's been haunting you all these days. Is there anything you think you could do to make it up to the parties?
Well, I actually did finally, I guess, somewhat confess.
Would you do help bury a body for them?
No, actually, I'm sober now, so they.
Well, that's good. So. Then you had to by that process go and confess.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't in so many words, confess, but they didn't really need me to confess, if you understand what I mean.
Okay,
they knew. Obviously.
You guys are parents. You understand when your child does something wrong,
right?
So,
all right. Well, I'm glad you feel a little bit better. I'm glad you're sober.
Yeah, like I said, a day at a time. It's been 3 years now, so.
Good for you, man.
Good for you.
Good luck, Patrick.
I appreciate it, guys. Take care.
Yeah, line 8 is just
all right.
Mind-blowing.
Linda. Hey, Linda, how you doing?
Good. How are you guys?
Good. Linda, we're talking about the end of the world. Let's get it out. What do you want to confess here?
Probably 25 years ago, I met a guy, and we got together a couple of times. And, of course, I was too stupid to realize that he would only call me from, like, pay phones. But he was married, and when I found out that he was married, I decided to tell him I was pregnant. And then I made him meet me to give me $250 for an abortion. And then I bought myself a really nice ruby and diamond necklace.
Okay.
Well, the dude was married and lying to you about it,
that
right?
adds an extra.
That's okay.
That's okay. That wrinkle makes it okay. If you just picked some poor sap and did it, that would have been vicious. But I don't know.
Yeah. That's pretty rotten.
Well,
man.
You know, the guy is married.
The guy's married.
He deserved a little payback.
All right, Linda, thank you.
I know what you mean, though, Case, to use the abortion
part
of
it's pretty
as opposed
low.
To just, you know, bribing him, saying, give me money or I'll tell.
A couple other good ones here. Let me go to Bobby. Is he still there? Yeah. Hey, Bobby, how you doing?
Hey, how are you?
Good. What's up, Bobby?
Not much. I just tuned in, and I listen to you guys all the time. You guys are great.
Oh, thanks.
I had to get this off my chest. Back in at September 11th when it happened, I was in the Marine Corps, and I was actually in scout school training. And we got our first mission at the beginning of it before Iraq eventually kicked off and everything. And the whole country was scrambling to figure out what was going on and everything. Well, there was some stuff happening in the Philippines and Basilan Island. There was Abu Sayyaf, New People Army, and Al-Qaeda living in there. Well, they had sent a special forces unit over there to, I guess, do some stuff. And the helicopter went down, and 8 pilots went to the bottom of the ocean. And now, remember, this wasn't big in the news or anything just yet. But so they got a Dutch ship, a civilian Dutch ship, and they wanted us. There was like 11 of us on there. Because there's piracy and whatnot out in the waters. So we went to go get the bodies out. So we're pulling the bodies up. There's this machine, like a submarine mechanical thing, pulling them, putting them in a crab cage, bringing them up to the top. Well, at the shore where we were going to go at Port Isabella, the media was there, CNN and whatnot. We weren't supposed to be combative yet. So we had to take the ammunitions off of the bodies and off the side of the helicopter, the chopper, the rockets and whatnot, and toss them over the side of the boat. Now, I'm a hardcore conservative kind of guy. I don't believe in conspiracies. I'm pro-country, but it was one of those things where I tell people there are cover-ups and hide-ups, and I was a part of it. And the only thing I can find online is a picture on the ship, and there's all this wreckage, and then there's some stuff about us building roads and whatnot, but they'll never tell you that it was a full-on engagement.
Well, Bobby, you weren't, you know, you were doing what you were told to do, and it was not as if you had instigated the cover-up. You were, you know, at that point, everybody's heads were spinning.
Sure.
Especially in proximity to a world-changing event. Mm-hmm. So, I don't think you have to beat yourself up for it.
It was just, well, you know, it's hard to, it is, because I am such a patriot and everything, and to serve your country and then to go through a system. We were telling them we were construction workers. I'm an 0311 infantry,
right?
You know, and I've never done construction in my life, and yet I'm supposed to be building roads in this place to help these guys out. And really, what I'm there for is, you know. And then the war kicks off, and everybody, you know, okay, here we are. But we were there and a part of it way before any of this kicked off. And people seem to think September 11th was it. I got to tell you, man, it was. And I don't want to get into it.
Yeah.
It's weird, wacko, but. It was a moment in my life, and I was a young man, where I thought, wow, we really do a lot of things.
Everybody does.
And everybody, and there are things that have to be done and things that have to be kept secret. And
interesting.
Yeah.
All right, Bobby, thanks for getting that off your chest, man.
Hey, no problem, man. Thanks.
We'll talk to you later.
If it's any consolation, Kathy stole money out of her friend's pocketbook.
Right. Pay for shots. Yeah.
Really, are things pale by comparison to post 9/11 cover-ups and burying bodies?
Should I go to the last caller, line one, or do we have time?
All
right, one more. I guess I know our guest, Steve, is waiting patiently in the green room, but this stuff is juicy. Let me go to Mike. Hey, Mike, how you doing?
Hey, what's up?
Yo, Bub, what's going on? Thanks, man. What'd you want to confess?
I want to confess that me, my brother, and my buddy Danny, we blew up a pool house on the 4th of July in 2001.
You blew up a pool house on the 4th of July, 2001.
For fun?
Did you get in trouble?
Well, my brother found fireworks down at the field that they were shooting off at, and they must have left one. So my brother brought to me early in the morning and told me to set it off in the field. And as I was setting it off, I turned. And when I turned, I kicked it by accident, and it shot off into the pool house.
No.
And once it hit the pool house, it exploded. So
why?
Me, my buddies ran. Why?
Why did the pool house explode?
It went right through the window, and I guess it just exploded inside.
There's chemicals in there. I don't know what's flammable and what's not. What's right. Sure is this, Mike?
Cape May Courthouse.
Now, did it blow to bits?
Practically.
All right, so what'd you do? Did you own up? Well, no, obviously you're confessing this.
Oh, no. Well, the best part is, well, when we ran back to my house, which was about, I don't know, a couple feet away, that when we ran back, we all jumped onto the couch to fake like we were asleep, all three of us, and we almost broke the bed, and my mom came running out because she heard the explosion.
Yeah.
And she was like, what was that? I was like, I don't know. Damn hooligans.
Damn hooligans.
Hooligans.
I think that's pretty awesome.
Irish Republican Army, damn them. Did anybody get in trouble, Mike?
No, nobody got in trouble. They had firefighters out there, police. They couldn't figure out who did it.
Wow.
Wow.
And you've never said this publicly before?
Never said this publicly.
Blow up the pool house. That's
right,
a good one.
Mike, thank you.
All right. We appreciate
it. It's off your chest now. Right. You can enter into the... The coming of days with a clean conscience.
Well, end of days. Nick is going to put a blog up. We haven't done a blog in a while.
There's already some posts that are coming onto the blog, and people are talking about like sexual molestation.
Oh my God.
People want to get stuff off of their chest.
Sure.
So,
wow. Why not? We're going to take a break, come back in a moment. Stay where you are. We'll be right back.
Wake up with Preston and Steve, spend your work day with Pierre and Jackson, your evenings with Jackie and Brent, and weekends annoying the neighbors by cranking us up to 11. But why stop there?
Anybody know what she's talking about?
Get your hands on some awesome merch at MMR's Rock Shop now. Clothes, hats, mugs, clocks, puzzles, baby and kid stuff, even a Pierre bobblehead, and more. They make great gifts, too. So get shopping at WMMR.com now. All the merch that rocks.
I hope you're ready. I hope you're all ready.
Yeah. This is a... momentous occasion that's taking place in our studio today. It's Meet Your Idol Day.
It truly is.
On the Preston and Steve Show.
I don't think there's any proper way to describe the history of what is about to happen. Not to put too much stress on Trey.
Do you hear what we're listening to right now?
Yes.
This is the music that my wife and I used to bring the bridal party in at our wedding.
I was the announcer at the bridal party.
Preston was the announcer. That's everybody right. is present.
Day. Ladies and gentlemen, Trey Anastasia. Yeah!
Thank you. How you doing, man?
Is it always like this? Pretty much every day. Yeah. No. This is a very special occasion here.
Thank you.
And we want to get to something immediately. Let me read a couple of instant messages that has come up. First of all, it says here's one that says, "Hey Casey, nice pit stains."
Yeah.
Because we have the webcam up. Here's another one that says, "I can't believe that Casey is going to meet his idol, and that T-shirt is the best he could come up with."
It's not my fault.
We had a wedding.
But we had a wedding gown ready to go. Trey, apparently we freaked out the people here in town that have connections with you.
Yeah.
This is an Uber fan, which I'm sure you meet all the time. Great fans. But we wanted to take it to the next level and have it be something that you would never, ever forget amongst all the people, the millions of people that you meet. We were going to put him in a wedding gown.
Oh, yeah.
To show his commitment.
I accept.
We knew you'd get it. We knew you'd get it. But your people said that,
it might be a little too weird. We don't want to freak
out. My people. They're no fun.
They're no fun.
I mean, you got to tell you also, Casey has been proselytizing the message of Fish and the music ever since we've known him. He was always looking for a way to sneak the music in as a bed or whatever. And so he's been a great prophet for you guys.
That's great. You know, I grew up listening to MMR.
Oh,
think about it. 1976, the bicentennial year, I remember. I was 12 years old. So would that have been Pierre?
Yeah. Pierre would have been.
And he's still here.
He's he's been, you know, the driving force behind MMR.
So I've been trying to get on the air here for 25 years.
You do.
You've been on for about a year and a half.
I have to say that I'm very impressed by the keg at 8:30 a.m. You don't see that at every...
We do what we can.
Just a standard here.
Yeah. It's just for you.
No, but welcome back to Philadelphia. You have a lot of fans here.
Thanks.
And you know what? It's amazing to see. I had mentioned the fanaticism of the band. And what I want to know, and I appreciate the band. I'm not a Fish freak, you know, I don't, and I'm not crazy like the people, and I don't mean crazy in a bad way, like insane. I mean crazy, just fanatical, yeah, of people who follow you around the country. At what stage of the band did this start to happen?
Did you see signs that it was taking on something?
There was always a couple of people that were, it always seemed like we knew everyone in the audience. It started off with two or three diehard fans, and then it became six, and then it became 12, and really, when we were playing arenas, I used to look out, and I could probably name most of the people in the first couple of rows. It really was like that. It wasn't like there was a lot of fans. It was the same group going from
town to town. The impression I get is that you and obviously just meeting you now, you're very accessible.
Yeah.
You know, and the band comes across that way as well, and that's endearing to your fans. I think that builds up this loyalty, because I mean literally tonight is Casey's anniversary.
Yeah.
And he's blowing off his 3 years.
Does she know about our new arrangement? Is that cool?
She is fine with it.
Yeah,
actually,
so I get to marry both of you.
Yeah,
that's
cool.
That's
you guys actually share the same birthday too. So
oh, really?
Yeah, yeah. So happy belated birthday, by the way.
Thank you.
No, look, he's glowing. You look like a pregnant woman, Casey.
Well, it's not like I haven't either seen you or
that's
met you. Just a lot of coffee. A lot of coffee. But no, I've met you on a few different occasions, but never said more than just a hello and you know, a geeky thanks for the music type of deal.
Thank you.
Hello and thank you for the music.
Thank you.
You guys are amazing musicians. I mean, each one of you individually are fantastic. I'm talking about the band Fish. Obviously,
yes.
You're doing solo stuff right now. I had been to shows before and appreciated what you're doing, but was totally lost I was an outlander, you know what I mean?
Outworlder.
I didn't understand the concept of all the things that were going on.
Yeah.
And it's really turned into... it seems like it's an unspoken language or verbiage that you guys have with your fans. You can kind of make the crowd react in certain ways by doing subtle things.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of a bizarre little power you wield.
Kind of what Hitler did.
Now, you know what? I think that it's equivalent to Star Wars, where, you know, all Fish fans are...
Let me take a Xanax here before you go into
this. No.
Actually, I was going to ask you guys, because, you know, I rocked so hard at Webster Hall last night. I think I may have thrown my shoulder out.
Okay.
Does anybody... anybody got any painkillers? Is T.O. still in town? Because I really...
Actually, we can set you up. That keg is actually full of heroin.
No. But with the Fish fanaticism and as with Trey as well, it's sort of like Star Wars, where like all fans are definitely fans, and then some people, it's like they take pride in knowing more about the band than the guy next to them, and then it reaches like uber weirdness where like you know Trey's shoe styles and like all these.
You creating the music? Is there? I assume you go through different phases where you're doing this and you are very appreciative of the fans. Is there ever a phase that you went through where it was like, I need to step back from this? Or has it always been something that you've
well,
been
Well, that's
totally
what
cool
I
with?
Think I'm going...
Right now?
I went through a couple of
right
years
now.
Ago. I actually not feel... You know, we... one of the things that happened that was kind of funny was that the guest list kept getting bigger because we really did know...
Yeah.
We became friends with a lot of the people that were, you know, like Casey and... people would come in and we'd become friends and... I think at our last show, our guest list was above 5,000.
Jesus,
I'm not kidding.
How do you make money?
It got so huge. And, you know, you don't want to let anybody down, so you just invite everyone. And then you find yourself parking a lot of cars for people. Big, huge. Like, the backstage is bigger than the front of the stage.
That's bad.
So it got a little out of control for a while, but it was fun.
Yeah.
You know, it was a lot of fun. I think everybody needed to take a break for a second.
How are things now with the solo engagements? You've done a lot of them.
I always did that.
Yeah.
You know, while Fish was going on, I've always kind of had two lives, so that's been great.
It's been
a lot of fun.
Is it a completely different vibe than
no,
Sea Fish?
Actually, not really.
Yeah,
no, it all feels pretty similar. It's been a lot of the same people that come, and So, no, not really that different.
Okay.
I saw you do a solo show at The Man a few years ago, and the Man Music Center here in town. And what struck me, the similarity between that show and the Fish show, was that you really are like an orchestral leader up in front of the whole crowd. You're controlling the music, and you know, you had the horn section, you had the entire band behind you. But I was blown away by the fact that it seems like you're really in control. For a music fan, it seems the music might be, you know, all over the map, but you sort of have a direction that you want to take the music every time and with every song. Is that the case?
Probably true, yeah. And with that particular band, that was a 10-piece band, and, right, and we actually had a very elaborate hand signal system. So I was really actually conducting that.
Was it semaphore? Were you doing the full act?
Yeah. you know, steel second. But I think that that's probably I try not to control it too much.
But it seemed like it was more instinct with Fish, and with that band, you did have to, you were gyrating a lot up on stage. You know, yeah, your hands are going all over the place because they can't follow you maybe as well instinctually as Fish would. Yeah,
we practiced a lot with Fish, so we talked about that stuff at band practice. But the intent's always the same, you know.
Yeah,
it's I like high energy concerts.
Absolutely.
Always have, and so it's always just trying to get the. I like explosive music, and that's what the idea is. I think.
Does that present a problem because you're such an artist? You know, performing live and with the band, when you get into the studio, is it daunting,
yeah,
to create that? You want to replicate that vibe that makes you do the music in the first place. It must be hard to do that.
It is. You know, I've found that you what I try to do is make the studio an experience in itself. So a lot of people on the record I just put out, there's like 40 people, I think.
Right.
And we would have these nights where people would come in and meet each other, and I tried to keep all the live energy as much as possible. But I do have a much easier time doing it live because I've been doing it for so long.
And with Dragonfly, you did on this album on Bar 17 with the song Dragonfly that you actually wanted to do with an entire album, which was just all one take.
Yeah, that's all one take.
Yeah.
Yeah. There might have been some stuff that we did a little bit later on with the horns, you know? Mm-hmm. But that was, I had Mike, our bass player from Fish, playing on that track. And Marco Benevento and Joe Russo, two great musicians who had come in to record on a different track. And the energy was great in the room that night. So we ended up doing four. And that song, Dragonfly, we did it at about, you know, 1 in the morning. Really made it up on this fly.
Is the bitch of it that you're 3/4 of the way through the song and someone farts?
Oh, that's the best. No, you put that in an echo machine and pan it around the room.
We have a horn section.
I'm waiting for somebody to fart.
I've got to ask you about this. I saw a live video of you playing. You had the weirdest looking goddamn guitar I'd ever seen in my life with antlers sticking out of it.
Oh, yeah, that'd be Oysterhead.
Yeah.
Oysterhead was a trio I did with Stuart Copeland. Yeah.
And I
only play that.
Les Claypool.
Yeah, that's the Matterhorn, call that guitar.
What was that noise, and how does it make that?
Well, that was actually recreated from a tragic roadkill accident. And I'm summoning the spirit of the beast.
Oh, is that what it is?
Yes.
You have this power.
I rubbed the antlers just so.
It was very weird.
I summoned the spirit of the beast, yeah.
Well, you have your guitar. Are you going to play something?
I'm going to play something for Casey. And I'm going to play for some.
All right. Move the mic a little bit over to his guitar there, please. Perfect.
It's sort of a wedding song.
Perfect. Romantic. Trey Anastasio.
The lights are low. Constant my mirth-beaten worker. I'm chasing the family berserker. I'm bought for the price of a flagon of rice. The wind buffs the cabin. You speak of your life. Oh, my willingly locust the lurker. Confuse what you can of the ending and revise your despise so impending. Soak on the rat that you didn't quite mask. I'm getting it clearly through alternate paths all mixed in with the signal you're sending. But who can unlearn all the facts that I've learned? I sat in the chairs and my synapses burn. The torture of chalk dust collects on my tongue. Thoughts follow my vision and dance in the sun. All my vassal constrictors, they come slowly undone. Can't just wait till I'm old, can I live while I'm young? jasmine tonight. I plug the distress tube up tight. What I say as it flutters away to where all this emotion is kept harmless at bay, not to educate somebody's fright. But who can I learn all the facts that I've learned? I sat in the chairs and my synapses burn. The torture of chalk dust collects on my tongue. Thoughts follow my vision and dance in the sun. All my vasoconstrictors that come slowly undone. Can't this wait till I'm old? Can I live while I'm young? Sat in the chairs and my synapses burn. The torture of chalk dust collects on my tongue. Thoughts follow my vision and dance in the sun. All my vasoconstrictors that come slowly undone. Can't this wait till I'm old? Can I live while I'm young? Can I live while I'm young? Can I live while I'm young? Can I live while I'm young?
Beautiful.
Do you need a towel, Casey?
That song is for Matt Kord. Matt Kord was at WMMR and went with us to Y100. Is back here. That's actually his favorite Fish song. So
That might be mine too.
Yeah,
really.
It's
so
beautiful. I've actually quoted that on
it's
air
early
several times. So. Can I live while I'm young? So,
yes.
Thank you very much.
It's early, though, huh?
Yeah.
You guys are always up this early.
Oh, yeah.
Always.
Yeah.
Much earlier.
They
than
would
this.
Notice so readily if we didn't show up.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, they would, wouldn't they? They would notice.
Well, I tell you what, I want to take a break and come back. Trey, you can stick around for a little while.
Sure, no
and maybe
problem.
We'll get a song from Bar 17
okay,
if we get a chance.
Absolutely.
We'll come back in just a moment, my friend.
Get ready.
What's new?
Glad you asked.
Dirty Honey. Ozzy Osbourne, the Black Keys,
new music, more of everything that rocks.
On 93.3 WMMR.
In our studio, we have, ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Trey Anastasio here. And then Casey was giving me a hard time about the pronunciation of his name.
Anastasio.
But for years, I've been calling him Trey Anastasio for years, and you picked today to tell me that I've been saying it wrong? The man is sitting 3 feet in front of me.
But you know what? I do it both ways, so...
So shut up.
What was David Letterman calling you the other night? Did he say Anastasio or Anastasio?
Anastasio.
Oh,
yeah.
He did
He's
say
a class act.
Yeah, he is. Yeah, but
I'm a douchebag. Did he have a keg of beer?
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
He didn't have a keg of beer.
No keg in the green room.
It'd probably be frozen. In that room.
Trey is playing tonight at the Electric Factory. Bar 17 is the new CD. And I wanted to bring this up to you and get your perspective on this, Trey. Tower Records is going out of business. As someone in the music industry, what do you think about this? That the actual holding the music in your hand or what the music plays on in your hand may be a thing of the past?
I'll tell you what I think about that. Is that the one thing is that I went out, I just moved and I bought a new turntable to kind of get back at my old albums. And I really forgot until I pulled them all out just how satisfying a great album cover is.
Yeah. Right, yeah.
You really forget. True. And so I hope that somehow cover art is preserved. You know, just the beauty of cover art. I mean, I spent a whole day about a week ago plowing through all these old albums and you know, all kinds of great stuff.
Well, you would
ELP and, you know, this is great album cover. So that would be the only shame of it. But I do think that's going to happen. There's no question about it.
I mean, I used to enjoy listening to the music while holding the album.
Oh, you sit there staring at it.
And see if there's something hidden about the music.
I know. Does this midget mean something?
Yeah. Right.
Does this midget mean something?
But it seems like our undying quest is...
What album are you...
I equated it to our undying search to save space. I mean, you had the LP, which was large, and the 45s, which weren't that big, which still took up a lot of space. And then eventually we got to the cassette, which was a little bit more manageable in your car. And then the CD.
I like cassettes. I'm a big fan.
Are you really?
Yeah.
You still hang on to
cassettes. I have a lot of cassettes. Yeah.
That's like you, Casey.
If you like metal when you were growing up, if you're a metal fan, you like cassettes.
Yeah.
Metal doesn't sound good on anything but cassette.
Really?
The thing that was cool about...
man, no question.
You can only
listen to Slayer on cassette. I'm telling you. You need tape hiss.
About listening to a cassette was if you would rewind it and then you'd stop it and you would actually end up in the space between songs magically.
Yeah.
That was a special little moment when you rewind a cassette. So, but now it seems like...
That sounds like a beautiful place, the space between songs. You spent a lot of time there when you were young.
Inspiration, my friend. Write a song.
It's like sort of Teletubby. There's something sort of Teletubby about that.
How do you and Fish and all the projects that you're involved with, how do you use the MP3 format? Are you involved in that side of things on how people can access your music?
I'm, I actually am the president of a record label now. I put my last record out on Columbia, but this one's on Rubber Jungle,
yeah,
which is my own label. And I know a lot of friends in bands who are kind of going that way now.
Because
you can. And honestly, I think you're going to see a lot of bigger bands, you know, the Radioheads of the world and bands like that, probably doing that pretty soon.
In a way, it supports, I mean, the smaller artists. You know, someone can get some buzz simply by popping something up on a MySpace or, and get it heard.
And I think that's going to ultimately be good for music because it's going to, the opportunity that somebody really strange might come along.
You can hear those.
I don't know if I always think that when FM radio, you know, I'm a big radio fan.
Right.
When FM radio started, it's this whole new format that needed content. And then you got all these cool bands.
Right.
And I think that that's happened now, but I just don't think the record companies have caught up yet. That with the internet and computers and iPods, there's a bunch of space to be filled. But the process of getting a record deal, it just, they haven't made that leap to, you know, where's all this great new independent music or, you know, cool out there music.
If the end
you were around for that, Pierre's standing next to
me. Oh, yeah, yeah.
You know exactly what I'm talking about.
I still like albums.
Yeah,
we actually do. We do a bit every day where we go down and play a record from our vinyl studio.
And they sound great.
Audiophiles will tell you that you put a virgin vinyl right next to a virgin CD and the vinyl will actually sound better.
And I actually can tell you why. I know, not to get really? Technical on you.
Yeah.
I can tell you why. Well, what they do, it's a little bit technical, but when you make a CD, you're sampling the sound, right?
Right.
And when you get up into the high end, the ear can hear 20,000 hertz, and the highest sample rate is 40,000. So you're getting two sample points per wave. It makes it a square wave.
You lost it.
Right.
Anyway,
I know what you're saying.
Do you know what I'm saying?
It almost pixelates it.
It pixelates it.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah, squares it off.
Up at the high end of human hearing, you're getting two sample rates per wave, which makes it
distorted?
A square wave. It makes it a harsh-sounding high end.
Right.
Vinyl goes way up above. And so it's warm sounding. That's why people use the words warm and cold. That's why people use the words warm and cold.
Yeah.
The reason I just described.
I haven't been using them before.
I'm just veered.
What are we going to do with these words?
I veered completely away from the cake party that we had. No. Let's go back to the cake party.
Well, I tell you what. Let's
I want to talk about T.O. again.
A huge Eagles fan, by the way, are you not?
I'm all Philadelphia sports.
Beautiful.
I keep saying that when
you've worn many a Flyers jersey on stage.
I'll only play in a room that the Flyers have hoisted the cup. That's why we always play the old Spectrum.
Yeah. Well, you just did an interview with A.D. Amorosi, and you had jokingly said,
yes, jokingly.
Damn you. That Fish was going to
come back together this year, December 23rd, at the Spectrum.
Yes.
That is a lie.
That is a lie. That's a lie. No, no. I lie frequently. But he said, everybody always says, when's Fish coming back? So yeah. I say, it's November 8th. I know. Just to get people talking.
Sure.
But the part of it that wasn't a lie was that people say, are you going to play in New York? You know, Madison Square Garden and all this stuff. And I say, oh, no. Because the Spectrum is the best place to play. The old Spectrum.
Yeah. I agree. I
it's still got the energy. And, I did get to play once with the old-time Flyers. I got to suit up at Madison Square Garden.
Really?
The only guy who wasn't. Yep, I played against the old-time Rangers.
Wow.
So Brad Park was out there. And Ron Duguay, remember him?
Jesus.
Yep. And but I was with, the old-time Flyers, who are my heroes, my childhood heroes, all of them. I got to sit in the locker room with them. It was incredible. And I want to give some props to those guys because they're the guys who, they didn't get paid that much.
No.
They got, they all got injuries and everything. You sit there with them, and it's such an honor to see these guys who, they did it. And year after year after year, we've got the young guys who are getting paid a lot more money. They got to win a cup.
Right.
Yeah. If they're going to, it was really cool meeting all the guys from the original
like
Stanley Cup team.
Yeah,
it's
kind of like meeting
me and
you.
Casey.
And
it's like
meeting Casey, meeting the old time Flyers. Yeah,
it's the same time he said my name.
Casey's just isolating every time you say his name.
No, but my first concert I ever went to, you guys did a Jethro Tull cover. I think it was like '94, but you were wearing a LeClaire jersey on stage. And I worked for the Phantoms last year, so every day I had to work, I walked past a picture of you on stage. Wearing the LeClaire jersey, and a la Laverne and Shirley when they touched the Beatles when they walked down their stairs.
That was when they moved to California.
It was like touching Laverne.
Yeah,
you were practically touching Laverne.
But you know what? I've seen
the same sort of fishy smell.
I should have worn the Reggie Leach jersey, for those of you who remember Reggie Leach.
I've seen you in a lot of different venues, and I always thought that you sounded best, your guitar sounded best, and you could do some weird things at the Spectrum. I think.
The party's going. But it really is a great, it's a great, big, echoey, cool, rock and roll sounding room.
Yeah,
and
you guys did something really weird the last time.
I saw
you
Bruce there when I
did
Bruce
you really?
Went in the 70s.
Wow.
One of my first concerts.
Wow.
And it was like Darkness on the Edge of Town or that kind of era. And it was one of the best concerts I've ever seen. I remember it. I mean, I grew up near here, so, and the weird thing about it is when you're in these rooms where you saw concerts when you were young and then you're standing up on stage, you remember the sound.
Yeah.
They have certain, they each have their own little characteristics. And
what room outside of the Spectrum do you,
Well, the Garden is cool.
Yeah, the Garden does have a good sound.
The Garden's actually on Springs. And most people don't know that, but it's the building is up on the, say, like, seventh floor or something.
It was designed as a novelty theater.
Yes, right. Yeah. It's sort of like one of those snakes in a can. Just the wrong note, and the stage just shoots right out of the roof. It's really funny. It's a riot. People splayed out all over on the pavement and everything.
You always remember those shows, though,
And then they stuff everybody back in again.
That's how it works.
At the Spectrum, I had the honor once, Trey, of... the band used to do some fun things, and one of them was a moving chess game, as you recall.
Yes.
And each
did
town,
you make the move?
I made the move on stage at the Spectrum as you guys were coming on. And
was it a good move?
I don't recall. But each town, there would be a different move, and an audience member would, at halftime, get to, pick
for
the move.
For two whole tours, we played chess against the audience, and we won once, and we lost once. And what would happen is they would make their move in between sets. And we would have all night to think of our move.
Right.
We would make our move at the beginning of the show. And then they had the first set. The big chessboard was behind the... it was very rock and roll.
Yeah.
Very rock and roll thing to do.
Well, how would they choose collectively?
They had a group of people who were really involved in the game and kind of sit together. And they would have the whole first set to sort of stare at the board. And then in between sets, they would huddle up and talk,
That's cool.
And then they would make a move, and they'd send a representative. And when we started the second set, somebody would come up on stage and make the chess move.
And one time that got to be me. I was quite honored.
That's cool. The band has a history of doing...
quirky, cool things.
Non-traditional
playing,
things.
Like that kind of thing.
Like not playing.
Quitting. I have some...
Right in the middle of a...
I have an early tape of you guys at the 23 East out in Ardmore, where I was hosting you, and we had an audience I went on stage, and I've heard the old tape recently, and I was on stage going, a couple of the guys need a ride back to Vermont. If anyone is going that way, could you come up to the stage and see me? Early days.
That was,
How things have changed.
Not really.
Now you're doing Hungry Hippos on stage.
He actually needs a ride
now
back.
Now I'm looking for a ride. Can't afford a bus anymore.
Well, let's hear a song. What would you like to play for us, Trey?
I'll play Dragonfly.
Excellent. Nice. Trey Anastasio, gang.
Yeah!
If your dream's all gone, your feet on the ground, why not aim up into the sky? 'Cause it feels all right with your boots and your dragonfly. Dance all night, spin all around. I'm just looking for some peace of mind, and it feels all right with your boots and your dragonfly. Boots and your dragonfly. Boots and your dragonfly. If your dream's all wrong, I know you can fly. Why not aim up into the sky? 'Cause it feels all right with your boots and your dragonfly. Don't sit home, get out of line. Spin all around and you'll be fine. 'Cause it feels all right with your boots and your dragonfly.
On WMMR. Dragonfly, it's a gorgeous song. And while you're playing that, I was thinking of lyrically, you know, how colorful you are. And I was singing back
you're
to
thinking, what the heck does that mean anyway?
I was thinking about like Farmhouse, which I think is a masterpiece. I think it's a fantastic album. And I don't follow the band or anything like that, but that album in particular is great. And on the song Farmhouse, and you're singing about dragonflies, I remember clusterflies in that song. And I wonder, are there some songs you go, what the hell was I thinking when I wrote that? I don't even know what that means anymore.
Well, Farmhouse
anymore.
Actually had the Farmhouse was I know what I was thinking then. I was with my friend Tom, who wrote a lot of the Fish songs with me. We were, Tom Marshall and I were co-writers of many of those songs, and we used to when I was telling you that Fish got very big and there's a lot of guest lists, a lot of people around,
right,
we got to the point where we started to sort of escape the scene. We would run away and write songs together, and we had rented this house up in outside of Stowe somewhere in the middle of the woods. It's an old farmhouse, and the first day we got there, it was the Northern Lights were happening. I don't know if you've
I've never seen them.
Never seen the Northern Lights, but
I took some home with me.
Yeah. It's an incredible thing to see. And we were so excited because we were going to be there 3 days, and we had the place stocked with supplies and cool electronic gear, and we were working out to be on the phone. And we opened up these back doors, and the sky was just exploding with these Northern Lights, and we just wrote that song in about 1 minute.
Wow.
And so you never, ever saw the Northern Lights and all that stuff. And, you know, welcome, this is a farmhouse, and everything's going to be all right. And so that That was just descriptive of the moment.
Some of them just come right in the
moment.
This
one, I had no idea.
Really?
It was late at night.
You woke up in a dumpster.
I think that means something very profound. Someday I'm going to figure out what it, if anybody knows, maybe somebody can tell me.
Someone out there will find some profound meaning for that, you know?
Well, it's funny because I'm not that comprehensive when it comes to like lyrics and words and stuff like that. So I think I've adapted my own meanings to
In fact, comprehensive was a banner moment.
Yeah. And I pronounced it right, too.
But, that's an SAT word.
But, you know, I will go through your lyrics, and sometimes I actually chalk dust torture.
I know what that means.
Well, so do I, but I figured it out at a concert.
Don't tell anybody.
I'm not going to say it.
I'm going to go with Trey's definition.
Is there like an overall message?
Chalk dust torture is school.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, you know, the horror of having to go to school.
Yeah. And then you got to act all old.
What would you call it? A comprehensive experience?
Yeah.
It's a comprehensive overview of the horrors of school.
All right, well, I'm going to bring this up now because...
if one is matriculated.
Yes. Yeah.
I don't know what that means. All right, so a friend of mine, was reading through your books and stuff like that, and you had an experience, maybe an almost drowning experience.
Yes.
You were with German guys, right?
Yes.
Okay. All those Germans.
All right, so...
Two German punk rockers and a guy in a dress.
Yes. So
in the ocean, naked. We were all naked.
What kind of idiot dresses up at a gown?
Well, no. Here's the deal. There are some certain songs where I feel like the lyrics are taken from that particular experience, like in The Wedge or something like that.
Yeah.
You know, we're bobbing on the surface and the shadows glide below. Yeah. I don't know if that
could
has
be.
To...
Could be.
But
could be.
Are there any lyrics? Or Come on.
That's a no.
Yes, that could be. You know what? Why don't you guys all shut up?
Yeah.
I know. But is there anything from that particular experience that kind of shaped your life lyrically, musically, whatever?
Yeah.
Trey's having a John Hinckley moment here.
Did you see God?
I saw God. God said, don't drown. Stay up.
There you go.
I don't know.
It's too early.
Can we talk about T.O. again?
Yeah. Stop being so comprehensive.
Actually, we want you to actually rate this vocal performance. We want to get your criticism on this here.
Wouldn't you think my collection's complete?
That's Kathy.
But I want more. Where they walk.
Can she sing it?
Where they run.
She's killing it. Let's just say she's killing it.
Come on, I can sing with you.
Oh, and do you want us to play this for him? Is that what you're pointing at?
A minute and 23 seconds.
What is it?
This is my creation. MC Corky.
Oh, yeah. Right. Play it for him.
Casey wrote and produced this song. All MC had some help from our production director here.
You'll clearly see a fish influence.
Yes. Okay. Well, actually, and we're going to have this gentleman on tomorrow, Kevin Federline. I don't know if you've ever heard of this guy.
K-Fed?
Yeah.
Why didn't you have him when I was here?
I couldn't. He's CSIs on Thursdays. So.
Two musical giants.
This was in response to Popo Zao,
which had some Portuguese in the lyrics. So I wrote a song called Espanol is Spanish for Spanish, and it would be my pleasure if you were to listen to this.
Okay.
All right, here we go.
Así.
Uno, dos, tres. No hablo inglés. One, two, three. I love chili. Con carne o con queso. I'm crashing tu cabeza. Taco, taco, taco. Spanish for taco, burrito, burrito, English para burrito, el autobús, mis amigos tus, jamón, en Japón, pantalones y cajones, zapatos en los gatos, matemáticas y papas fritas, la biblioteca. Era mi pega. Izquierda de, derecha de, la cocina, iria mina. ¿Cómo estás? Bien, ¿y tú? Así, así. ¿De dónde eres? Chimichanga.
Quesadilla.
Pimienta. La naranja, salsa roja, la cucaracha. Jennifer López, muy bien.
What'd you think?
Greatest song I've ever heard.
Wow.
Wow, I needed that. I had the rope in my car, and thank you. Giving me another few years of life.
Listen, wow. What Idi Amin in there. It went from good to genius.
You don't hear him reference.
Bibliotheca
no.
And Idi Amin.
Well, it rhymes. That's all I was really going for there.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. I would like to give you something else. There's a DVD, and my ass is featured in it a lot. It's called Kill Casey. If you ever have time in the tour bus.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Oh, my God. I didn't
see. You know, you can give him the brownies and everything and bake for him, too.
I didn't bake it, but okay. Try and melt away. They're really good. If you ever have time in the tour bus or whatever, put it on. It's only like an hour long. So there you go.
But it is funny.
It is funny. So there you go.
I did want to ask you a serious question, though, for a second, Trey, because a little while ago we were
talking. Are you going to rub my girl? Are you going to be my girl?
Are you going to rub my girl?
Are you going to rub my girl?
You had mentioned earlier talking about being a fan of radio. Has it ever bothered you that through your career you really haven't had a lot of radio airplay, a lot of support from radio, or do you understand that? Or, you know, what's your take on that?
Well, we didn't.
I mean, college radio obviously has played you, but you know, as far as commercial radio,
not really bothered. No, not really bothered. But I am a fan of radio. You know, I really grew up listening to the radio. I think radio's cool. Radio's, you know, magic. You know, you turn on the radio right when you're in a bad mood and a good song comes on. And
yeah, and you hear about Idi Amin.
I didn't like it when I started showing up to do this kind of thing at radio stations and find, you know, some places you show up, there's like a closet.
Yeah.
Say no more. I don't like that. But really, you know, there's nobody there anymore. Radio kind of went from the days when Pierre was in here and I'd wake up in the morning and you had characters and people who you knew. And then it sort of became for a while there. I don't know if they're still doing this.
Here, by the way.
They're still here from when I was looking. Yeah. But they would, you know, radio started to become a computer. Sitting in a little closet. That, I didn't like that very much.
That is one thing we are thrilled about here, is that around the clock, there's a live person on mic.
No, it's just so great coming in here and seeing this, because this is what I would expect at WMMR, and it's cool to see there's a ton of people. If I could describe it for people, there's people all over the place.
Yep.
Everybody's having fun. It's cool.
There's a keg.
There's a genuine party going on in here, and that's the way it's supposed to be. So keep that up.
Because you got it.
There's a few stations kind of left that are hanging on to that. You know, XPN and you know, KFOG, and you know, you go into these places and you recognize everybody, and it's like a family. You know, so like I said, it bothered me more. It didn't bother me as much that I wasn't getting on the radio. I didn't like the development of radio turning into a taped, you know, characterless. Prefab kind of world.
And we're not Clear Channel.
There you go.
And we've been around 38 years, which for a rock and roll station is phenomenal.
It really is incredible.
Almost 39 in April.
Yeah. And the fact that you're still here.
25
And then
years.
I listened to you when I was...
Pierre is 82.
I know, I'm actually 83, Steve.
He brought Rudy Valley on.
Yes. I started with a block of Benny Goodman.
Valley's Rudy and Frankie both came in.
Here's a new kid.
A new kid on the block.
I think he's going to go far.
I can't do age jokes as I'm riding around Pierre. So.
Old guy on the block.
Yeah. Well, Trey, we can't thank you enough for coming by here this morning. It's it's been years in the making that Casey's been trying to get
Casey,
this to
thank
happen.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah. We appreciate it. And
for being so personable and not putting your cigarette out on his head. Nothing to smoke, but yeah.
No, dude, that would have been a mark I would have had for my entire life.
I'm never washing his forehead again.
Ever. Anything else you want to add, Case, before we wrap up?
No. I think I've geeked out enough.
That's okay.
Anybody?
Are you still getting married?
Damn. No,
we canceled the wedding.
Not gonna do. They canceled the wedding, but can I be a fan for life? I'm taking that as a...
He's playing something for you.
I'm trying to play Casey Jones for you, but I can't remember.
I have it up here in our little computer.
Hey, by the way, are there tickets available for tonight's show?
Oh, yeah, of course there are tickets available. The show starts at 8:30.
And what exactly does it mean, of course?
I know, that's what I was wondering. Of course. Are you kidding me?
It's a gigantic room. I don't know what I meant by that. Hit the dump button. Pretend like I never said that. So show up early. Whiskey Tango or Whiskey Dix is right around the corner. Join me for a drink. Thank you to my wife for allowing me to go out and and go to the concert tonight instead of having anniversary dinner or something along those lines.
Things that normal married couples would do.
Yeah, I've geeked out enough. I mean, I've named pets after songs. I've done the whole deal. So
there you go.
There
you go.
There it is. So thank you. There.
Are you in tune with it? I have no idea.
Hey, you know what? I wanted to ask you this a while ago. Have you been taking singing lessons, by the way? Because your singing voice sounds...
Not this morning.
No. Exactly, this morning. No, but when I saw you with Phil and Friends...
thanks.
I mean, your voice, not that it was bad before or anything like that. Oh, God.
You just keep digging that hole.
I thought you would smell, but you don't.
No, no. But...
you know, I used to.
I thought there'd be body odor, but I was surprised to find out there wasn't. I thought during the interview you might be eating human flesh, but it turns out you don't.
What, you finally get a decent shirt?
Yeah. I'm so used to seeing you unkempt and sloppy. It's amazing.
Did you guys expect any less?
No, it's fine. All right. Cool.
No, this has been fantastic, Trey. Trey, a pleasure to meet you. Anytime at all you're in town, please come by. You're a great man. Thanks a lot.
Thank you. Thanks,
Trey Anastasio, ladies and gentlemen. We'll take a break and we'll be right back. Stay where you are.
Stream WMMR anywhere you have an internet connection. Check out the mobile app or go to WMMR.com. You'll figure it out from there.
Say goodbye to juggling paper coupons and missing out on the best deals. Download the Acme mobile app today to have your own personal grocery guru right in your pocket. Use it to plan your shopping list like a pro. Get personalized deals on the products you buy most and choose your shopping style. Whether it's in-store, delivery, or drive-up, where an experienced Acme associate will carefully select, bag your order, even pick up your prescriptions from the pharmacy and bring it all right to your car. Acme. Fresh foods, local flavors. Say goodbye to juggling paper coupons and missing out on the best deals. Download the Acme mobile app today to have your own personal grocery guru right in your pocket. Use it to plan your shopping list like a pro. Get personalized deals on the products you buy most and choose your shopping style. Whether it's in-store, delivery, or drive-up, where an experienced Acme associate will carefully select, bag your order, even pick up your prescriptions from the pharmacy and bring it all right to your car. Acme. Fresh foods, local flavors.
Back with more of the Preston and Steve Show podcast.
Now, Bizarre. WMMR presents Bizarre. Preston and Steve's Bizarre File.
The mother of 13-year-old Donnell Dixon says that he's been to Children's Hospital for 7 days after doing push-ups at his school. Vinyanda Mitchell says that it was a punishment for running in the hall and closing lockers, and her son had the choice of detention or push-ups. Now, Donnell says that he did 100. The director of the school says the coach says it was 3 sets of 20, and the boys were able to pause in between and drink water. The day after the incident, the teen said that his arm swelled to double its normal size.
Cool.
So his mother took him to the emergency room. He was diagnosed with, and I'm going to mess this up, rhabdomyolysis.
For the layman, big armatosis.
Which is a breakdown of the muscles often caused by overexertion. It can lead to kidney problems and blood in the urine. And Donnell's mom says that he has had that. She has talked to a lawyer. The school director says that they are devastated and are just hoping that Donnell will fully recover. And his mom, of course, says that she is hoping for the same thing.
From just doing push-ups?
Yeah, I find it hard to believe.
Really?
But if he ended up in the hospital, something definitely was wrong. So, and they
and it's a real thing? Big armatosis?
Yeah, but if you can't do, you know, what they're saying was 60 push-ups, that's...
That's not good.
He's a 13
kid. How do you exert at all?
Yeah. I don't know, but anyhow, we'll do a follow-up if necessary. A man in Ohio says that he got a letter from his cable company telling him that he owed them $16.4 million.
Wow, man.
Fortunately,
a lot of online porn.
Time Warner Cable says that Daniel D. Virigolo does not owe millions, and that it was just a typo and it was the wrong amount into a computer, and it triggered an automatic letter to be sent to him. D. Vigorillo joked with the reporters that he should have added Showtime because the small extra charge pales in comparison to the millions that he owes. Well, the woman whose tirade at a Panama City Beach Burger King became a YouTube sensation is now facing a felony charge. I don't know if you guys saw this video
or not.
Camisa Smith was charged with felony criminal mischief with damage of more than $1,000 and a few other charges, too. She was caught on a cell phone video as she climbed onto the restaurant's counter, threw items, and struck employees. And she was wearing a bikini at the time.
Yeah, she went a little crazy.
Yeah. It's on YouTube under Spring Break Bikini Brawl at Burger King. The video shows Smith standing on the counter to shout at the cashier that she had argued with in the drive-thru moments earlier. About halfway through the 101-second clip, the dining room explodes with flying napkins, trays, straws, food, and what appears to be either a child's booster seat or a large water bottle. I mean, she trashed the place.
She did.
Real quickly. The fight started when the woman complained about her order, so she is now going to be in jail. An argument between two armed neighbors over a dog and its feces escalated to a shootout in rural Mississippi, sending one neighbor to the hospital with injuries from shotgun pellets and the other neighbor to jail. Terry Tennant, who is 52, said that he was struck in both hands, shoulder, chest, and side by a spray of bullets from shotgun blast fired by his neighbor, Jerry Blassingame, who was 60. The wounds are not life-threatening. Tennant was angry that Blassingame at him because he thought Blassingame's mixed breed dog had defecated on his lawn.
How could he tell?
He
just had that mixed breed look?
Each man described his side of the argument. Tennant said that he was friends with Blassingame and only went over to his house to complain in general about the dog feces in his yard, not to accuse him, and encountered a drunk, irate neighbor. Blassingame said that they argued because Tennant shot his dog last week and threatened to kill him over the dog poop. Tennant denied shooting the dog, saying, he said, "Jerry, your dog ain't even dead."
Jerry, your dog ain't even dead.
He said, "Just meet me at the levee and
just
I'll shoot
meet me
you
at
down.
The levee. I will be dressed as a woman."
Why?
Huh? Did I say that out loud?
Blassingame says,
"It's been a tough year, Jerry. Very tough year." That's a way of living that is so alien to us.
But you have to meet at the levee.
Yeah. Well, can't just meet in front of their houses.
Now, Jerry says,
this is more a levee issue.
Jerry says that Tennant was armed when he returned to the neighbor. And Tennant said, "Point that gun at me."
You'll be pointing that gun at me.
No. Point that gun at me. And he shot twice, and I returned fire. And then
on second thought, do not point that gun at me.
Blassingame was charged with aggravated assault. Then it could also face charges. It's been a tough year.
Yeah. I'll tell you more at the levee.
You'll be the woman, right? Yeah, right. All right, anyhow. And there you go. That is what I have in the bizarre file. We're going to take a break. We'll come back in a moment. Stay right there.
In these difficult times, MMR reminds you, social distancing doesn't mean you can't still be social.
Good morning, my neighbors!
Connect with us on your favorite social media platform today. After all, since we're going to be here a while, let's make the best of it together. But safely. Because we don't know where your timeline has been.
Oh, my God.
93.3 WMMR. Everything that rocks.
Ladies and gentlemen, our next guest. You know him very, very well. We've gotten to know him over the past couple years. He's really cool. And what's awesome, here not only to talk about the television show, but a movie.
Yeah.
Which looks funny as hell. Please welcome Charlie Day. How you doing, man?
What's up, fellas?
Yo, brother, good to see ya.
So, my first question is, because I take a lot of personal pride in this, is how's your acting careers going?
Really good.
Yeah. Any offers?
Little Shakespeare in the Park. We'll be doing a little Center Park stuff. We're doing Taming of the Shrew.
Right.
Thank God that you guys are as charitable as you are, because we are clearly, A, we are clearly not visual, and B, we are the absolute antithesis of actors.
Yeah. I thought you guys nailed it.
Yeah.
Really? I thought you nailed it. I love that episode.
You know what was cool about, because you, while Steve and I were filming, when we went to L.A., both Charlie and, everybody was there, actually.
Yeah.
And you guys were hanging around right when we were shooting, and we do the take, and then immediately you would say something like, you know what, why don't you just say this? I mean, you were just throwing stuff out as it went along. I didn't know it worked that way. And I'm like, oh, my God, he wants us to ad-lib. You know? Yeah. I don't know what to do.
Well, you guys needed a lot of help. So we were doing everything we could.
You gave me a great line. I got to say a-hole, and that got chomped.
But, that's right.
But it all the finished product, everyone loved. And I'm glad we, you know, people do just like it genuinely because it's hilarious.
Yeah.
But we happen to be in it. So
that's how about the special effects? They, you know, it looked like because we shot that in like a little tiny hockey rink.
Yep.
Yeah.
But the effect of the green screening that was done, and then you put the First Union. Well, it was the First Union Center at the time.
What was it? Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, Wachovia Center, whatever.
Wachovia. But anyhow, and I thought it looked flawless.
I'd say movie magic, but it's more like basic cable magic.
Green screen magic. I'll tell you what, though. The talk about that pressure situation, because we did that actually on the ice at the Wachovia, and we had just what, 4 minutes?
No, like 6 minutes total to do two different takes.
Yeah. And man, that's a high pressure situation, especially with hockey fans who are normally accommodating.
Yeah, they'll go right at you.
Yeah, right.
No, they were into it, man.
They were. They did a great job.
Wickedly into it.
Yeah, so. It worked. And then we spliced all that together and looked great.
Yep, cool, man. Well, listen, let's talk about this movie.
Let's do it.
Yeah, this looks really cool. Steve showed me, as soon as the trailer came out, it's like, have you seen this yet?
Yeah.
It's called Horrible Bosses. Charlie stars in it. So does
Jason Bateman.
That's right. And Jason Sudeikis. And what I love is that the guys that you've gotten to be the bosses, they are playing
against type.
Totally against type. Colin Farrell specifically.
Yeah, he's awesome in it.
He looks ridiculous in this.
Yeah.
And I mean, so he's such a good looking leading man kind of guy.
Yeah, he took his hairpiece off for this.
So that's legit, is it? He's legitimately bald. That's amazing.
He's actually bald. So.
Oh,
wow.
Yeah, and he put the paunch back on.
Know that. Yeah.
But I mean, I'm sure this is a question you know you're going to get asked constantly, this question, but you are being really harassed by Jennifer Aniston, who's your boss.
Right.
And she is hot as hell.
I love her.
And so the question you get, I'm sure you've gotten a million times already, what's wrong with that?
Well, clearly, my character is a homosexual man.
That must be.
No, you know, I mean, he's engaged to be married. So, you know, unless you're like in politics, you know, you don't normally like cheat on your wife. So.
Sure. Yeah,
so
yeah.
He's just trying, you know, he's trying to be a stand-up guy. And then he's just an idiot and he decides to have her killed.
For those who don't know the story, it's three guys, friends. They each have a boss that is a jerk in a different way.
Yeah.
And they come to the realization that they just can't take it anymore.
Yeah.
And they want to axe them. They want to get rid of them.
Let me tell you something, too. Bateman's boss, Kevin Spacey, has before played one of the most horrible bosses. The movie Swimming with Sharks.
Yeah.
He's just horrifying. And he would be a bit daunting. Do they all sort of, though, relish the chance to just let the restraints off and go a little overboard?
Yeah, especially Aniston. I mean, she plays a real, what can I say?
A-hole.
Yeah, she plays a real, like, a-hole. Mm-hmm. And, you know, which she always is, she's America's sweetheart.
Right.
As they say. So she's playing against type. And she went for it, you know, which really isn't, you know, everyone always says she's like the nicest person. She really is. And she really goes full, you know, full a-hole and very, like, very risque with the sexuality. You know, she's saying all sorts of things that you can't believe are coming out of her mouth.
Which is cool. I mean, because I think she's probably looking for a little bit of redefining of who she is. So this is a good way to do it.
And she nails it.
She nails it.
A lot of people who I know who've seen like early cuts of the film, you know, come out saying, I can't believe, you know, how good she is in this role or how funny. So she really killed it.
Because there's obviously some of the pictures that she's taking, some of the things she has you in are require super close contact.
Yeah.
I mean, what level of focus do you need to?
I was just ashamed of myself the whole time.
She's
in incredible shape. And so everyone's saying, you know, you got to take some photos together and you're both practically naked, you know, are you worried about, you know, being a little excited? And I just felt shame and misery.
It was easy.
Because I got to get in the gym. you know, stop my steady diet of donuts.
I think it informed your performance, though, because the look on your face is clearly like, oh, my God.
Yeah.
You're supposed to be drugged and you look that way. So,
yeah. That's right. Yeah.
Well, you're an actor and you've worked closely with beautiful women before. But I mean, you know, these pictures, for those who don't know, she apparently will drug Charlie with nitrous.
Yeah, yeah.
Make him pass out and then pose him and take these pictures without his knowledge.
Right.
And their sexual positions and stuff like that. But I mean, you know, were you, before this photo shoot, were you just slightly nervous, or how's this going to play out, or?
Yeah, I was, because that was like maybe the second day I ever
met her. They did that second day?
Yeah. So it's like, hi, how you doing? Let's take our clothes off and take some shots.
But, right.
But really, you know, I was just like, you know, well, I haven't like pooped in 5 days, man. I'm like all bloated and nervous.
Right.
Like,
yeah. Why couldn't I take a good dump this morning?
It was as unsexy as it gets.
Jamie Foxx in the movie is you go to him for help.
What's his character's name?
Well, I can't say it. I can't say it on the air. It's Mother Blanker Jones.
Right.
You know.
But I was reading an interview where you just love the fact that he wouldn't break. He wouldn't, like, he stayed in that sort of that guy.
I got him, though. I broke him one time.
Did you?
Which was pretty good.
Yeah.
It was like, you know, a little notch on the belt of accomplishments. But, you know, you forget how funny he is, because he's just turned into sort of an action badass kind of guy.
Oscar winner for Ray.
Oscar winner. Yeah. But, you know, he started on in Living Color.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, if you remember, he's super funny. So it was fun to see him, you know, be loose with it and, you know, do his thing.
I like the Jason Bateman has just that everyman sort of, you're sort of playing a similar character to It's Always Sunny, but it is different.
Yeah.
But Jason Bateman has that thing that he does, that put upon guy thing. And he's a machine with that stuff. Did they allow you improvisational room or latitude with this?
You know, part of how I think I got the part was I'd done a movie a year ago with Jason Sudeikis called Going the Distance.
Is it the Drew Barrymore?
Yeah, it was the Drew Barrymore one.
Justin Long?
Yeah, and the two of us, Sudeikis and I, did a lot of improv in that movie, and the studio liked that, and so they put us together in this one. And, you know, we hadn't worked with Bateman, so we knew we were going to be going nuts, and he plays it. He plays that straight man so well that Sudeikis and I could just go off the wall with our characters or with the scene, and then he just wait and he drops a one-liner and nails it, you know.
Underscores
his timing's really great.
That's cool.
So the movie's coming out July 8th. Did you guys, that's pretty soon. Did you already have a premiere for it, or?
No, we're going to do that on the 30th, I think, in LA.
In LA, And the big stars coming out and everything, Jennifer and...
I think so.
Okay.
Yeah.
They don't tell you a lot, do they?
They have not called. I keep texting Spacey and nothing back. I don't know what's happening.
We like Charlie, just not a lot. Right.
They're keeping me at a safe distance. You know? They're like, well, let's see how this movie does.
If he had worked out a little bit more.
if only he was in shape.
Hey, we found out that you guys on It's Always Sunny recently worked with Springsteen. Is that a big secret that we have revealed already?
That's unconfirmed. We were going to try and get him on the season, but because
Clarence
just died.
Yeah.
I don't know if he's going to be available because he's they're so tight and he's dealing with all that.
Who found out? Was there sort of a circuitous way of finding out that he was a big fan, or did someone just...
It came through Danny. I think I think Springsteen's kids were fans of the show, and then he found the show through them. And
Jersey guys?
Yeah, a couple Jersey guys, and said that he wanted to do it. So we wrote a funny little bit for him this season. But I don't know if he's going to be able to do it or not.
You know what, Charlie? I get this all that we've all gotten this several times, and I'm curious how much of it gets you. But I have people emailing me that say, listen, I've written a script for It's Always Sunny in
Really?
Philadelphia. All the time.
Yeah. And we know you guys know them. Can you get this to them? And I have to break back to them and say, look, they write the show. Mm-hmm. Other people don't write the show. So, I mean, do people try to send you guys stuff all the time?
They do. And, you know, you can't read it because, you know, if some guy writes you the world's worst script, but he has the line "Dumpster Baby" in it, and then sees our episode and he says, "Hey, I know you read this and it's in your show, and you already had the idea." you know, then you're up the creek without a paddle. So we can't do that.
You send them back unsealed, unopened, right? This is standard protocol, or just
we don't
discard
even,
them?
No, they don't even, you know, we just say, sorry, I can't read it.
Right.
You know, when the show's off the air, I'll read all the bad scripts you want. But
Oh, that would have been a good one to do.
By the way, I got to speak about Rob McElhenney. Do you guys know what he's done for this season?
We do know, and we're looking for verification on this because we haven't seen any pictures. Is this, in fact, the case he's put on 50 pounds?
Yeah.
That you're swearing to God he put on 50 pounds.
Yeah, he did it intentionally. You know, he wanted to do something interesting with his character, something you haven't seen on TV.
You've never seen Shia De Niro for Raging Bull. I don't. Who?
People don't normally go that way. You know, they'll get thinner.
Right. Yeah.
Christian Bale will lose weight for a role, but McElhenney tacked it on. And I mean, he was eating these protein and ice cream shakes. He went to a doctor and he said, you know, how can I do this without?
It's not that hard to gain weight.
It's hard to gain 50 pounds in 2 months,
especially on his frame. He was not a guy who was.
Well, he was in shape. He looked pretty good. Do you have any pictures on your phone or anything?
I don't. You know, well, that's part of the joy of tuning in to see the show, but. You know, he grew his beard out and he gained a lot of weight. And he also lifted weights, so he just has this big kind of boxy sort of heavy frame. And
Jesus. So what compelled? Was there just something said offhandedly or that he just got it in his own mind?
We love the idea that the reality of these characters, oftentimes you see characters on TV shows and people look better and better over the seasons because they're so used to seeing themselves. They just put so much effort into their looks. And you never see the reality, which is that a couple guys with a dive bar in South Philly probably would really go downhill.
Right. Well, you're exactly right. Oh, the thing that comes to mind is Loretta Swit in MASH, who is working in a MASH unit at Hot Lips, right? And somehow she gets her teeth gapped. She gets a nose. She looks like a model by the end of the run. She's in a MASH unit in Korea.
Right.
So the idea here is to go the complete opposite way and show the dilapidating effects.
Yeah, and just because his character is so obsessed with himself and his frame and his physical ability, you know, there's a lot of funny stuff we could write to the bigger he got.
Did he get a? Has he got a big gut now? Is that part of it?
It pretty much all went to his stomach at first.
Okay,
you know, and at first I couldn't really see it, just the way you know you spend every day with someone you don't know notice, but if you're apart and you come back, but then when I saw footage from the years before and then looked at him, it was shocking.
What does Caitlin say?
Caitlin can't stand it. I mean, let's face it.
Who would? Who would
let's
like?
Face it. Yeah.
I can't wait to see him because the last time you guys were in town, or one of the last times you guys were in town, Rob turned to me and he turned away and then he turned
back, and
he said, "I didn't even recognize you. You've gained 15 pounds." And I was
just like, "Time for some payback."
And now I can be like, "I did it for the show, Rob. You know, I've been gaining this weight for years for the Preston and Steve
Nobody's
show.
Ever done it on radio.
I know. Totally pays off.
Totally unvisual medium.
I just read. So does the weight gain have anything to do? I read that you guys are filming down at the Jersey Shore somewhere.
It does play into it, you know, because those Jersey Shore characters on the reality show, they're all very obsessed with their body. So Rob thinks his body is like that, but
okay.
You mentioned the Danny connection to Bruce Springsteen, and if that happens, that'd be great. But I was just watching over the weekend Get Shorty, and there are any number of great Danny DeVito movies from years and years and years. Have you ever, and are you comfortable even, because you guys are friends with him now, but he's really is a legend. Can you use him to get to people like Bruce or to that level?
Or is that just uncool?
Well, you just never know what Danny's relationship is with someone. Before we've said, hey, you know, you mind calling whoever.
Nicholson.
Nicholson or Sean Penn. And you never know if, like, those guys are picking up the phone like, oh, no, not DeVito.
Right. Yeah. You know? It's an Always Sunny thing. I know it. I know it.
Yeah. But, we try and throw his weight around a little bit if we can.
But he seems like he would do it if he felt comfortable doing it. But otherwise, he's never going to, make the call to Jack to ask him to come on the show.
Yeah, I don't think Jack wants to do TV. I mean, I'd love to have him on the show. That'd be amazing.
If only that movie career was working for him.
Yeah, if he could just get that going, he'd
get that
okay.
up and running, he'd be set. So the big rollout, no pun intended, of the new McElhenney physique, right from the get-go, I assume we see it. All right, it's... Wasn't a work in process for the new season.
Yeah, right? It was. You're all in or all or nothing. So,
it's not like Dee's pregnancy,
right?
Yeah, right. Slowly. Where we can kind of reveal it through the season. Now he's big right from the beginning.
By the way, that episode last year of Who Got Dee Pregnant,
hilarious,
was so funny, and because it was just everybody's recollections of what happened that night.
It was like Rashomon.
Yeah,
that's what it was, a little Rashomon style.
She just slowly but surely became more and more into it, like a bird.
So by the time it became Max recollection, she was a full-on ostrich.
Yeah.
It was hilarious.
You know, I got to give full credit to McElhenney for that because we did like a photo shoot, and for some reason, I can't remember why, we did a photo shoot with an ostrich. It was supposed to be something interesting. And at the time, we were reshooting that scene with just a big, funny bird costume, and it really wasn't working. And McElhenney says, why don't we actually use the ostrich?
This is awesome.
And I was thinking that that's crazy. It's too much, but it just turned out
I laughed out loud.
It was hilarious.
When you're doing that, and as we saw when we did our little thing, you know, you guys are all throwing out stuff there. Is the rule just throw it out and see if it sticks, or you know, who has the ultimate override? You guys are all equal in your abilities. Who has the ultimate override?
You know, well, if we're arguing because there's three of us, it's just two against one.
Right.
You know? And then we'll, you know, the majority rules. But usually, you know, we just try different things, and usually it's pretty obvious. There's one joke or one take that works the best.
Right. And by the way, you guys are in town shooting some exteriors right now?
Yeah, season 7.
Is it becoming more and more of a hassle to come back here? Or is it just something that's important?
No, I wish we could do the whole show here.
Yeah.
It's just, you know, you point the camera anywhere in South Philly, and it just looks so much better than everything on TV, which is usually shot in Los Angeles,
right?
Or
yeah,
New York, and it's just, you know, you don't get those great row homes and the awesome look of the city. So it's essential that we shoot here, I think.
How's the? I mean, with the movies, and you're in a lot. I mean, all you guys have sort of, you know, are making the big leap, and as we say, you're no longer the big secret. You know, the talent is obvious, and you guys are doing well with that. How do you juggle the show and the movies? The scheduling must be a nightmare.
The scheduling's been a little crazy.
It's
been a little crazy. Yeah. But, you know, you do it while you can. And then work now while you can. And then, you know, do whatever Jack's doing in his big castle one day, hopefully.
The golf club.
Yeah, at the golf club.
Yeah, three escorts.
On the yacht.
Right. Is there any chance another traveling show will happen again? The stage show?
Yeah, you know, we were talking about maybe trying to get into that this fall, but we'll see. It's always just a big scheduling thing, trying to get everyone together. But we definitely want to tour around because it was such a blast.
Oh, man, I laughed so freaking hard that night.
Yeah.
That show was live was just an absolute scream.
It's the best experience, you know, because you do TV or you do movies and, you know, you might bump into someone on the street and they say, hey, I love it. But to actually get the live interaction while you're doing it.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
Yeah. Had you ever done any stage stuff before that?
Yeah.
A little bit. Okay.
Yeah. But it's different. You know, you do a play and it's a bunch of little old blue haired ladies, you know, soft clapping.
Right. Yeah.
You know, this was like a rock show. It was great.
Yeah, it was. It's
and
awesome.
It was great to see the McElhenney line of family members walk in to take up half the Tower
Theater.
Yeah,
what was that, like a third of the audience?
Yeah. It was wild.
Hey, do you guys have a second company for all the inventions that you guys have? Like, is Dictel something that you guys actually make money off of? And
yeah, actually, you know.
And what about the shotgun?
There's a little balance between the network, you know, they own most of the stuff. And, you know, so if you're going to buy a Green Man suit or whatever, that's usually the network. But they couldn't sell dick towels because it was like too risque to put on their site. So,
somebody got it.
Yeah. Pull up that picture of Kathy.
You got to see this.
Yeah. Oh, that's everywhere.
Yeah, the photo bomb.
I get people send me that on Twitter and stuff.
Did anybody make any money off of kitten mittens?
Somebody somewhere, I'm sure.
Okay. Well, you're saying you've signed. Once you've signed over, they own the quote unquote intellectual property.
Yeah. You know, down the line, one day we'll sue them and sort everything out. But you know,
the lawsuit will come.
Yeah, the lawsuit will come. But
I watched that again recently, and there's a scene that part where you're filming the kitten mittens infomercial. The cat just falls off the table, and it immediately cuts away from you. Were you cracking up during that whole thing?
You know, I was just like, what's going on with this cat? But the cat was okay. We had a little pillow at the end of the table, so the cat was fine.
It was cute and
not
funny.
Not that I'm worried about cats.
I've heard the question floated a number of times about an It's Always Sunny movie, and I always wonder, because you get away with so much anyway, and because, you know, what would a movie have that you couldn't really see on the TV show?
Do you get that a lot, though?
You know, it was funny. About a year ago, we were talking about if we were going to do it, you know, doing something funny, like where we went to Afghanistan to try and find bin Laden. But I guess that storyline's out.
Yeah.
I don't know. You know, I mean, it'd be fun to do. But I always feel like those things, I feel like you want to do it like after the show is over, when people are like, oh, man, it'd be fun to see those guys do their thing again.
Yeah. Any chance of another? I know you've done it once, but the Christmas special was just amazingly funny.
Yeah.
I think you could do that or pick another holiday. Or
yeah, well, I don't know. Maybe we'd have to do another holiday.
Yeah. Keep it fresh. Easter.
Yeah, a little Easter. Yeah, Easter celebrations.
Right. Sure.
Fourth of July could be good.
Right. Yeah. The whole holiday series.
Yeah.
Are there, while you're in
Ramadan.
Town. While you're in town filming, are there going to be, are you looking for any crowd scenes or anything like that? Or, because we can get the word out for you.
You know what?
Off the top of my head, I can't think. Did anyone tell you?
Yeah. Hold on a second. I think I have it. But you know what I wanted to ask you? Since the show's gotten even bigger, do you guys still have the same amount of involvement in all that goes into it? Because I know in the very beginning, like, you guys were doing everything.
Yeah. No, we still do have the same amount of involvement. I don't think... We were talking about, you know, is there any way we could keep doing seasons and not have the same involvement, because it's a ton of work? But I think between Rob and Glenn and myself, you know, we just wouldn't ever feel comfortable passing it off to someone else.
That's your quality control. If the troika is not involved,
You know,
it'll diminish, you know? And I think it's a product that's purely you guys. If you step away from it, I think it would suffer.
Yeah, right. Yeah. And I've heard, like, people, you know, I've heard, like, some outside complaints, like, oh, the guys aren't writing enough of the episodes, but... You know, it's less so that we're not writing and more that we're giving credit to younger writers who are trying to get their, you know, their foot in the door. But we still, if you like an episode or you don't like an episode, the buck still always stops with us.
Right.
And I tell you what, man, it's an operation. It's the real deal. And we went, and I know, I've always wondered why TV shows were so damn expensive to make.
Yeah.
Well, the production shoot, or the I don't know what the information sheet is that you get that describes everything that's going on, was insanely detailed. I mean, just so much as to, you know, where are the nearest hospitals and all this other all this information that had to be put together just to shoot this scene or two scenes that were being shot.
Yeah, right. Some guy puts a buzzsaw through his hand, you know, you got to do something about it.
Yeah. Think about the number of people who were on set for a scene that didn't involve Charlie or Rob or Mac, and their scenes were shot in Los Angeles. But just for you guys with a couple of stunt doubles,
true.
And they had like seven camera guys and seven sound guys and a director and an assistant director and everything. It's really impressive.
You talk about the cost. We had Ryan Dunn in here and, you know, from the Jackass crew, and you guys are apparently trying to put together an episode that turned out to be far more expensive than you had thought of. Will that come to fruition, or is it just off the table because it's too expensive?
No, I think we'll do it in the next season. You know, we just had a lot of sort of big episodes this year where we're doing some sort of expensive things to shoot, and we realized that, you know, by the time we were getting to the end of our writing season, we needed to do a smaller episode just to bring the show on budget.
Well, we're going to be doing we'll announce, you know, we had a big party for the premiere. We're going to have something similar this time around, and it's going to be very cool. The reaction, this is one, it's funny because the people coming, oh, we got to get the, trust me, we'll mention just a couple times. It'll be fine.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because people are voracious for it and continue to be so.
Do you know when season 7 starts, when people will be able to see that?
I don't know the exact air date, but it'll probably be in the first or second week of September on Thursday nights, I assume.
Yeah. And now the whole thing is just to see how fat Rob got.
Yeah. I mean, really, you know what's going to happen is people aren't going to be able to pay attention to the storyline for the first, you know, one or two episodes. They're going to have to go back and watch because it's distracting.
I think we weren't
sure if that was true or not, but that's pretty
it's
damn
totally
impressive,
true.
Man. 50 pounds in 2 months.
Yeah.
That's unreal.
Yeah.
All right, well, in the meantime, go see Horrible Bosses, because that looks like a great movie, and Charlie is one of the stars of the film, so get out and see it. Cool, man, and, you know, obviously, thanks for coming by here, and enjoy the time in Philly, as always.
I love being here, and thanks for being so good to us.
You got it, man. Excellent. Charlie Day, friends! It's always sunny in Philadelphia. All right, we've got to take a break. Come back in a moment. Stay there.
The Preston and Steve Show Podcast. 93.3 WMMR. Everything that rocks.
I got an email from a friend of mine I stay in touch with. who lives in Minneapolis, and she was telling me something interesting that happened. Her aunt died recently. Isn't that interesting?
Yes.
Yeah.
Wow. Funny thing, her aunt died.
Yeah. No, her aunt died about a month ago, and Cheryl's mom, who would be the sister of the woman who died,
right,
was going through, you know,
her personal effects,
the belongings, you
right.
know, and it's something that you do when somebody passes away. You know, things will be handed down to certain people, even, you know, without the will and whatnot. You have to go in and just kind of sort things out and end up
right, yeah,
dispersing it amongst the family and whatnot,
keepsakes and things.
And apparently they were going through some of her stuff, and the woman's mother who had the woman's sister who had died stumbled across a bunch of porn mags. Now, this woman apparently was extremely prim and proper.
Really?
Very buttoned down.
Wow.
And just, it, like, sent shockwaves through the family.
Do you have S Masters 70s?
Well, how old were they?
Cheryl's a few years older than I am, so I guess her parents are going to be in their 70s probably.
No, I mean, like, how old were the magazines?
I don't know if they're, you know, knocked up and milky, you know, current like that or not.
Or on parchment paper.
Yeah.
Because maybe if they were, like,
knocked up and milky.
Because we had the one guy who collected all the
yeah, like
Playboy
60s
magazines.
Playboys, yeah.
No, these
maybe
are porn
like
mags.
Collection.
This was porn.
No, yeah. it wasn't just a collection. No, this is, no. This was
straight
for,
up porn.
For personal
I
use.
I collect vintage Beaver magazines.
Ew,
but it got me to thinking about, you know, when somebody that you know or in your family passes away, some of the things that you find out only after they're dead about what happened with them.
That's why when you get sick, you got to start burying that stuff in the backyard.
That's right.
And oh, man, that was my dildo collection. I don't want them to find that.
But, I mean, I found out that after my... my aunt's ex-husband passed away. He's a guy I never knew, but it was
right.
in the family amongst that was kind of like, I think he had been busted doing inappropriate things with kids.
Oh! Man.
At some point, but I didn't know about that until after the dude
and
died.
So that's when they found out about it after the death?
I think that might have been it. And I don't know how. It's like one of those things that the family doesn't really talk about. But it was only after the guy
disgusting.
Died that we found out that.
That's why you need a buddy to come over if you die suddenly to take all of your porn to know where it is.
Your shovel buddy.
Yeah, and either burn it or destroy it or keep it for himself, because you know that if you die suddenly, your in-laws are going to come over and find that stash that you have knocked up.
If they find my stuff, I will die again.
Yeah.
I know somebody who did that.
Yeah.
I knew somebody, an acquaintance who, and I forgot how the guy died. Like I said, it was just acquaintance. It wasn't a really good friend. But the guy had, it may have been a suicide. I'm not sure. I don't really remember. But what the guy did that night, his friend, was when the parents were out taking care of whatever needed to be done, snuck into the house, broke into the house,
yeah.
and took out any, you know, drug paraphernalia, porn, anything the guy might have had, because the last thing he wanted was the parents to go, oh, my God, what happened?
No, of course not. And it's, you know, and even when you're dead, you can still get embarrassed.
Yeah, yeah. Highly embarrassed. Yeah. We have a coworker, and I won't mention his name, but he lives alone, and he was telling me that he has an entire plan set up. If he goes, he's got a buddy to come over and knows where all the porn is stashed.
Yeah. That is what a true friend does.
Yeah.
Wait a minute. Matt Cord.
Actually, no.
No, nah, not Robot. No.
I just wanted to say it like Matt. Like Matt Damon.
So, when I die, I have it rigged up in my house, so this, you hear this? And my shovel buddy. No, but I do know, you know people who the ones I think that really need to do it are the ones, I'm perceived as being a sick bastard anyway, so.
Yeah.
But the people who are kind of conduct a life that is not exactly like, you know, maybe people who are transvestites or, you know,
yeah.
or maybe, you know, have got things that they don't want people to know after they die. I think you should have a shovel buddy.
Maybe, but if I hear that noise, should I come running because there's free porn?
Yeah, but if you collect things over time...
You just get up, you're eating with Rochelle, you get up from the table, I've got to go.
What's the matter?
I'll be back in exactly one day. When I come back, don't ask any questions.
If you accrue things over time, you tend to forget about it, you know? Like, I know that I have porn in, like, three different spots in my house right now.
Right.
And as I accrue more and more things, my attic is getting more packed. And I know there's a bag of porn up there somewhere.
A bag of porn?
Yeah.
You know, that's a...
See, that you should have that too, so that I'll be at my table. I'll just get up, open up my suitcase, put my stuff in. You know, just, I must go now.
But you know what? That could be a good movie title. I know there's a bag of porn up there somewhere.
Somewhere up there, a bag is full of porn.
Wouldn't you think my collection's complete?
But I want more porn.
Wouldn't you think my collection's complete?
Oh, God. But I love porn.
Let me go to Joe.
Oh, come on.
That's all right. Let me go to Paul. Hey, Paul, good morning.
Hey, guys, what's up?
Hey, how you doing, Paul? Go ahead.
All right, yeah. So after my dad killed himself, I found out he was a complete and total S&M freak.
So your dad committed suicide and you discovered that? Wow.
Yeah.
Now, how did you find that out?
Having to clean out his house, like you said, I found, all types. Well, first, he hung himself, and we've come to realize that he went out like Michael Hutchins, apparently.
It was all autoerotic asphyxiation.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
And this was completely hidden from the family.
Well, yeah, I mean, let's put it this way. His church, there was like 500 people at his church because he was so involved with his church that came to his funeral.
Oh my God. And was that hard for you to find that out?
Well, I kind of, like, I didn't like him anyway. Like, I wasn't very, like, he was a jerk. Like, but that's beyond the point. Like, the worst thing was, like, when my grandmother didn't tell me, like, I was going to speak at first. And then, like, I was going to speak at the funeral because I'm the only child.
Right.
And then when I was cleaning out the house, I was like, I can't go up and say
anything. Yeah, say what a great man he was.
You could, but just wear a ball gag.
but
all bets are supposed to be off after you die and you're forgiven and everything. But the truth of the matter is that I could see in a case where, you know, you don't want your parents or somebody, or your loved one to go up and say, "Oh, I had no idea he kept butt plugs."
Well, God forgives you, but everybody on the planet.
I know. It can be scandalous.
Well,
so.
At least that guy, he went out, accidentally. Because if he's going to do it on purpose, don't you think he would kind of take care of all that stuff first?
Right.
You call your shovel buddy.
Yeah. I like that. Shovel. Is that a term you made up?
I just made it up.
I like that.
Yeah, shovel buddy.
Your shovel buddy. Let me go to Jared. Hey, Jared. Jared, good morning. What's up? He said Matt Damon.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Matt Damon.
What's going on, Jared?
My family is actually from Texas, and I found out that when my great-grandfather died, someone found a KKK costume somewhere in the house.
You've got to be kidding.
Wow.
Now, I mean, I think it was from a long time ago. It's stored away and everything, but still, I can't imagine that being too comfortable.
Right.
Wow. Is it Robert Byrd, by any chance?
Some people will keep that that side of their lives completely quiet amongst their family. Some are open with it, but others will obviously totally hide that.
It's not, and it's not like you can. Oh, you know, you try to look, honey, my KKK outfit still fits.
God, that's horrible.
I haven't put on any weight.
Let me go to Brian. Hey, Brian.
Gadzooks.
What's up, man?
I have a friend who goes out of town a lot for business, and he's been dating this girl for a year. Like, they're still kind of in the honeymoon part of their early relationship.
Yep.
And he always tells me, you know, when he goes out of town, remember, if anything happens to me, you need to go to my house and clean everything out, get my hard drives, get my magazines, get my videos. And it's like, he makes me swear that I'm going to go do it. And I'm like, dude, I got you. Don't worry about it.
You're a shovel buddy.
I'm in, and we have that agreement. So,
listen to that sound.
It is for real.
Yeah. I can completely believe that. You'll be laying in bed one night. I've got to go.
Exactly.
Now, is it reciprocal? Do you have the same agreement with him?
Yeah. We kind of talked about it because we're both kind of in new relationships within like 2 years. And, you know, we both agree that like if anything goes down, we have each other. So,
okay. It's a legitimate agreement.
I think at retirement communities, they should when you get there, you should have a constant bonfire that's going because, you're in the twilight of your years so that you can, you know, when you arrive at the place, you can throw your porn into that big ditch and, you know, with anonymity at night, you know, you can go get rid of what you need to get rid of. So this way you don't have to worry about it.
I'm going to go to Pete. Hey, Pete, good morning.
Hey, how's it going? You guys rock.
Thank you, Pete. What's up, buddy?
Well, you're listening to your story this morning there. I actually had to clean out my brother's room before my mother got there after he died.
How old was he when he died?
25.
25 years old. And was he still living at home?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. So, did he die accidentally?
Yeah, he was involved in a police chase with the Yeah, he's involved with a police chase and was killed.
Okay,
so you went in, you're like, look, it's tough as it is on mom, so I need to go in and just get this out of there.
What did you remove? What were you getting out of there?
Let's put it this way. There was about half a dozen Rubbermaid bins full of porn.
Oh, my God. Oh my God.
In Rubbermaid, no less, to ensure freshness.
That's right.
Well, now, he was kind of a connoisseur.
Oh, a connoisseur.
Pete, may I ask, did you throw it out or did you keep it for yourself?
I kept it.
Of course. He's mourning, but he's not stupid. Come on.
You can never throw away porn.
Had to honor his brother's memory.
It's like throwing away a religious item of some sort.
You just don't. And you. It's like with the flag. You don't burn it.
Yeah, Shroud of Turin.
I forget what the movie was. It was with Owen.
I Love Porn?
No, Owen Wilson and Kate Hudson.
About Dupree? Something
about
Dupree?
Yeah, about Dupree.
You and Dupree.
Yeah, he throws out Asian porn, and one of his friends comes like tearing over to the house. He's like, no!
Let me go to Kat next. Hey, Kat, good morning.
Good morning.
Hey, what's up, Kat?
Now, my brother, he passed away on Thanksgiving morning, his fiance and myself were with him when he passed away. So as soon as he passed and the ambulance came to get him, we're like, oh, God, we have to hide the paraphernalia.
Oh, man.
You had to hide paraphernalia.
You had bongs and whatnot?
Oh, several.
And how old was he when he died? 30 years old. And still living at home?
Yeah, no, he was in his own apartment, but we knew that we had to get the stuff out because family was going to come and help us move all this stuff, so we had to take the initiative to remove it all right away.
If you're very crafty, you just bring it back and put it in your dad's room.
Well, my dad's in North Carolina, so that'd be a little different.
Okay, all right.
What did you find? Was it like boxes of stuff, or...?
No, the stuff was, like, scattered miscellaneous throughout the whole house because he had, like, certain areas where he could hide stuff and certain areas where he couldn't hide stuff.
Wow.
So we had to basically clean the house to find all the stuff. And even after all that, we still found some more stuff.
Did you save a pipe or a bong as a keepsake?
Of course.
Of course, yes.
Just for sentimental reasons.
I would imagine you'd have to.
And it glows brightly at night.
All right, thanks a lot. Let me go to, I want to see what this means. Yeah. I have Derek on the line. Hey, Derek.
Nice.
Very nice. What's up, Derek?
You guys rock.
Thanks, man. We appreciate it.
Hey, about 20 years ago, my grandmother died, and my mother and her sisters went to clean out and everything. And my mother came across a death certificate with her own name on it.
A death certificate with her own name on it?
Yes. Apparently, before my mother was born, my grandmother had a child named her Eleanor, and the child died a couple months later. My mother was born, she named her Eleanor.
So she was Eleanor... too, but wow, that's got to be weird. Jesus,
that's pretty weird.
That's freaky.
That would freak you out a little bit.
But I'd understand why you'd hide something like that.
Let me go to Lauren. Hey, Lauren. Good morning.
Hello, you guys rock.
Thank you. What's up, Lauren?
My dad just recently passed away, and I found a photo album of him and my mom with naked pictures.
You found parental porn?
Yes.
Oh, my God.
Lauren, that's horrible.
You've already gone through the trauma of losing a parent.
Can you send some?
And then, yeah.
No!
Is it good?
Is it hot?
Is it good stuff? Or is it, what's it
Lauren,
about?
I feel so bad for you.
Well, my dad liked art, so they thought it was.
I like art, too.
Question, Lauren, was this what they call point of view of photographs, or was there a third party taking pictures?
No, it was both of them.
Camera being passed back and forth.
Oh. Okay. Now, is your mother still alive?
Yes.
Did you say anything to her about it?
Yes, and she just kind of laughed it off.
Oh, that's just us photographing porn.
Oh, I would be horrified. I would be absolutely horrified.
Let me go to...
I was going to give you that on your wedding day.
Let me go to Lancey.
Something borrowed, someone blew.
Lancey, good morning.
Laney?
Hey, Laney.
Dad Cheeks, guys. I'm so happy to talk to you.
Thank you, Laney. What do you have to share with us?
So, me and my best friend had this agreement for so many years, which is odd because we're so young. But I have a diary, and she knows exactly where it is. and she knows to go through it and read whatever she has to read and give my mom whatever she needs. And my little sex toy drawer, she needs to go through that and take everything out and just get rid of it.
Wow, so she is your shovel buddy as well. She will she will remove your sex toys. Are we talking a voluminous amount of sex toys or
just a bottom drawer full?
Just a bottom drawer full. Oh, wow. And then there's stuff in the garage.
Lady,
the bigger stuff's in the garage.
Take it from the ceiling.
It's on meat hooks.
So Lainey, you have things in your diary that you don't want people to know?
Well, I mean, there's some things that I guess would be interesting, but an awful lot that people shouldn't know.
And, Lainey, you're doing it not so much. You just want to preserve. You don't want your mother to know that you were breaking concrete in your
exactly.
room.
Yeah. Exactly.
Well, Casey,
or like, you know, there's stuff in there when I found her having sex.
Really?
Casey, you look confused about the diary thing.
Well, I just don't, you know, I understand a diary to a certain extent, but for this very reason, why would anybody, like, keep a written, you know...
A chronicle? Well, some people...
Because, like, my memory's so bad, I like to go back into it, and, like, when my boyfriend F's up, I'd be like, right here, remember when you did this?
Yeah, oh, my God, you're one of those.
Yeah, you're basically a court stenographer.
Jesus.
No, but there, people who do diaries write or keep journals, they can be very cool. I agree with you, though, Casey. Writing stuff that is very volatile.
Yeah.
Like, you know, that will be discovered after. You know, like you were down in the barn getting some hubba hubba. Yeah. You may want to leave that out.
Yeah, that one might not be good. I mean, if you had this recorded.
Our horse forces my hand on this massive dangled pump. And then you get all the nasty all over you. I don't like that one.
I know you don't. Let me go to Dave. Hey, Dave, good morning.
Hey, how you doing?
Good. What's up, Dave?
This is like mid-80s, my grandfather died. Yeah. And it was my brother and my mom, my dad and I.
Right.
It was my dad's dad. And we're going through all the stuff, and my dad went through the safe and discovered that he was adopted.
He found out he was adopted after the fact.
Oh. Yeah, didn't know.
Did that just must have blown his mind.
Oh, yeah, totally. I mean, he's been trying for, like I said, I think it was 85 when my grandfather died.
But no, he had no hint, no indication, no suspicion prior to that?
I think they had ideas.
Right.
But
because he was black and you were right.
Wow, that's horrible.
That would be a tough one to swallow after they pass away.
It'd be better to find the porn.
I agree. At least you can do something with that. Let me go to Frank. Hey, Frank, good morning.
You guys rock.
Yay! Thank you. What's up, Frank?
How you doing? Good. I actually, after I got married, I sat down with my wife and I said, look, we got an awful lot of stuff in the house that if anything were to happen, I think I should get one of my friends. And she said, oh, don't worry about it. Lisa already has a key. She knows where everything is. It's been mapped out. They actually sat it down. She planned it. My shovel buddy came built into the marriage.
Oh, really? That is planning. And you do that because you love the people in your life and you want to protect them from your perversity.
I just thought it was... But the fact that actually my wife had a list of where to go in what order to get it out of the house.
And is this to hide these things from your kids or your parents or from whom?
I'm going to have to say pretty much everybody.
Oh, okay.
Everyone who comes along.
Is there like a security code system like we have with our code terrorism alerts here?
A fail-safe system?
Yeah.
Oh, absolutely.
All right, so that way you know which ones to go for first.
All right. I'd never really, thought about seriously considering
a
shovel buddy or that term. I have to leave now.
I must go now.
I will be back. Do not ask any questions. I love that. All right, well.
Just get it from the table.
Consider that. Talk to, create a shovel buddy relationship today, if
protect
you will.
Protect your loved ones.
Yes, we've got to take a break. We'll be back in just a second. Stay where you are.
Listen to all the WMMR podcasts as well as a live stream on your Alexa-enabled device. Just say, Alexa, open MMR.
Say goodbye to juggling paper coupons and missing out on the best deals. Download the Acme mobile app today to have your own personal grocery guru right in your pocket. Use it to plan your shopping list like a pro. Get personalized deals on the products you buy most and choose your shopping style. Whether it's in-store, delivery, or drive-up, where an experienced Acme associate will carefully select, bag your order, even pick up your prescriptions from the pharmacy, and bring it all right to your car. Acme. Fresh foods, local flavors.
Now, back with more of the Preston and Steve Show podcast.
Now,
bizarre.
WMMR presents bizarre. Kristen and Steve's Bizarre File.
This is messed up. An 8-year-old boy is likely to lose an eye after it was shot out with a BB gun.
Aha! Uh-huh.
Shot his eye out, but it wasn't he wasn't the one who did it. It was a teenager that did it. And on purpose.
Not a finger!
The victim was riding his bike with a friend when two 16-year-olds ordered him to get off of it. This is an 8-year-old boy. They were making him do push-ups and exercise. If they didn't do what they were being told, they were threatened with being shot. And when this young man said, no, I'm not going to do it anymore, he shot him in the eye.
Freaky bastard.
The boy was hospitalized, expected to lose vision in his right eye. He's going to lose his eye, basically. The other young boy was shot in the leg. Suspects are being held on assault charges. The boy charged with the shooting was shooting the victim in the eye, had no prior record, but if he's convicted, he's going to be in jail until he's 21.
Wow. Yeah, so rightfully so.
Yeah, that's messed up. Let's see. This is the fourth year that Zombie Awareness Month is being recognized. Zombie Research Society founder Matt Mogg said that Zombie Awareness Month is designed to make people more aware of the coming zombie plague.
Uh-huh.
Said it's getting bigger each year, and this year the focus is on helping children become aware.
This is what Kathy loves this stuff.
All kidding aside, Mogg said is dead serious.
And he's an idiot.
When he says that he believes zombies could take over the world at any moment.
It could really happen. I saw a film that depicted this, and it was quite chilling.
Said it's not like the doomsday clock that marks how close we are to global disaster by setting the time between 1:45 and midnight. I could say it's 11:55, but we could wake up and see zombies tomorrow.
And I could say he's a jackass.
We will never know when it will happen until it does, and then we won't have time to react. It will just be run and scream time.
Yeah.
And this idiot is serious. Sid. Yep. Let's see here. Scientists are developing a new wave of impotence treatments based on the gas associated with stink bombs.
Really?
Researchers have discovered, that a liquefied form of hydrogen sulfide, the gas with the smell of rotten eggs, could help men with erectile dysfunction.
Woman's going to hang around for that?
It might even prove an alternative to the popular impotence drug Viagra. Studies have shown that the gas, which is produced naturally in small amounts in the body, helps boost blood flow to the penis.
Why don't I get some wine and some stink bombs?
In a new report published in the Journal of Sexual Medicine, researchers at the University Hospital in Singapore have analyzed results from more than 30 studies that say the gas could have beneficial short-term effects similar to Viagra and also long-term ones.
This has got to be a prank.
No. An estimated half of all men...
Why don't I slip into something more comfortable and you set off a few stink bombs?
There are thought to be a number of cases.
If things start going really well, I'll light up a dog, a paperback full of dog.
Depression, diabetes, high blood pressure, all these things can cause...
I'll give you a wedgie and you twist my nipples really hard. Yeah. Awesome.
Anyhow, the drug may be effective, they're saying, but it is the...
And when I fall, I'll
be using it. I'll move
something tells me it's just a frat joke.
No, it's real.
Real?
Yes, it's real.
It's a fart joke.
Let's see. What's that?
Fart joke.
It's a fart joke. Let's see here. This is messed up. I sent a video to Nick with this. I don't know if you put it on our site or not, Steve, but... Or Nick.
Steve or Nick.
A rare cancer surgery is the only way that Dugan Smith, who was 13, could play baseball again. That's all the teenager needed to hear. Nearly 3 years ago when Smith was 10, he noticed soreness in his right knee after sliding. What he thought was just a limp turned into a malignant tumor on the thigh bone.
Wow.
He could have chosen several methods of recovery, but only one would allow full leg growth. The rare procedure he chose is called Van Ness rotationplasty. Instead of using a full prosthetic or an artificial bone, doctors removed the middle part of Smith's leg, rotated the bottom half 180 degrees, and moved it up and connected his blood vessels. Basically, at his knee, he has a backwards-facing foot now.
So, it bends the other way.
No, it doesn't bend at all.
No,
it's just
backwards.
The foot is facing backwards, and it's at his knee. Yeah. His positive attitude paid off when he towed the rubber as a starting pitcher for his baseball team. He has a prosthetic now that he hooks up to that foot.
Huh.
You got to see the video. It's really strange, and it shows the kid with the foot backwards on his leg.
Why did they leave the foot on?
I don't know.
Okay.
You know, now, that's a practical joke. They did that as a joke.
Leave the foot on?
Yeah, so the guy would just have to have a strange-looking leg.
I do need to see that, but there have been a couple of other freaky things that have people can do with their bodies lately. I didn't see the video of the guy who can turn his head like 180 degrees.
I saw that.
Okay, how weird does that look?
It's Wait, this guy can turn his head 180 degrees
completely
like an owl?
Backwards, yep.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then there's another guy who's on a dance show, like so you can think he can dance
or
whatever.
So you think you're an owl?
Yeah. No, but did you see that dance move, Kathy?
What was
okay,
it?
This guy basically twists his entire body.
Oh, yeah.
It really... I've never seen anything
twist
like it.
Twist his entire body what? What do you mean?
Through his hands, you're talking about, right? Like he'll clasp his hands and bring them over, like almost all the way around his entire body.
I think of, like, if I was going to do a back bend.
Bizarre Files over.
Yeah, I know. If I was doing a back bend, and then you kind of twist your whole body 180 degrees.
Oh,
I'm telling you, you've never seen anything.
You mean like a human slinky?
It's bizarre.
You mean like a Stretch Armstrong?
Kind of like a Stretch
Hungry Hippos?
Hungry Hippos is more like it.
Wait, he can turn the top.
I don't know what you're talking about.
He can turn his torso around?
Yes.
Okay.
It's
do it.
Get the video, guys.
Guys. All right.
Guys, interns, and show these guys because you know how good I am with words.
I want to see that, and I want to see the 180 degree head dude.
Yeah.
And I want to see Footboy. Now I can't think of anything else but this guy and what the hell Casey was describing.
I don't know. They're
wait till
all right, is this guy? All right, here we go.
Here's that guy.
They're moving frantically in the other studio to pull the video monitors up, but this guy can turn his head almost completely. Now, they show, Steve, they take him in and they x-ray him as well. He's not doing a parlor trick.
Right.
They do it with his shirt completely off and everything. He's just got the muscles around your neck don't allow... your neck to your head to go that far.
Okay.
But his do for some
he's an ugly dude.
Is he?
Yeah. He's Russian.
I can turn the head completely around.
This is kind of the kind of stuff that you see on Stan Lee's Superhumans.
Yes, it's a good show.
It's a really good show.
All right, turn that friggin' head.
Oh, my God.
Oh, now he's doing it.
Oh,
whoa.
Whoa.
That is cool.
Why would you even
keep it going?
That?
Yeah, even if I could do that, I wouldn't.
Yeah. That's kind of.
Oh, my God. Okay.
All right, I'll put that one on the site, too.
Put that one on the website as well. I love that type of
stuff.
Take
it off the screen.
That's awesome.
Jesus.
Turn it off!
I don't think I've ever heard you use that kind of impression.
Take it off!
Take it off the screen.
You'd make a great nurse, Kathy, coming into the hospital. Oh, Christ, what happened to you?
Kill it.
Oh, go, euthanize it. Why are we keeping it alive? I can hear you.
My mother is a nurse, and if somebody, like one of the kids, gets hurt or something like that, I can't touch it. I can't look at it.
Yeah.
I'm like, really?
Your mom is that way, and she's a nurse?
Yeah.
That she's could be a job killer.
Well, she's a psychiatric nurse, but, you know, she went
so
through
she
training.
So she acts all crazy.
She went through training.
I'm the worst when our kids get hurt, and they're panicking, and they come over to me, and I'll say, yeah, that looks pretty bad. And my wife says, it's not that bad at all. You know, so anyhow, we do need to break at this juncture, so we'll be right back.
Back in the olden days, about 5 years ago, your only options to keep listening to WMMR when you got home would be to drive your car into your living room or turn on something called a radio. But now, through modern technology, the smart speaker that's secretly collecting data on you...
What did you say?
...can also stream WMMR. Just tell Alexa or Google to open MMR, and magically we'll come streaming into your home. Plus, it may help distract your device from becoming self-aware. 93.3 WMMR. Everything that rocks.
What's going on, Steve?
Well, Vanilla Ice has just landed a gig as a judge on a new singing competition in Canada called Canada Sings. Ice says he's thrilled to be able to perform the incredible feat of finally making Paula Abdul's selection as a talent judge look like a logical decision.
Yeah. Duh.
Literary agent Charlene Martin has announced that the jewelry store in Lindsay Lohan's criminal case is trying to get a book deal out of the whole ordeal. Martin has revealed the working title of the book, which is How to Completely Destroy Your Court Case by Trying to Get a Book Deal.
Yeah.
What? And finally, Jodie Foster, who directed this movie, The Beaver, asked attendees at the premiere screening to try to appreciate the artistry, the sophistication, and the resounding humanity of Mel Gibson's performance. Foster then dimmed the lights and then invited the audience to, quote, enjoy this movie about a guy who sticks his hand in a beaver's ass.
Right.
And then, Trash.
All right, thank you, Steve. We have two lovely ladies that are in the studio this morning, and they're here to promote a film, and we're excited to have them here. Absolutely. We've been looking forward to this for a couple weeks now.
These are two of the best of the best.
Absolutely.
Crack me the hell up all the time.
The movie is called Bridesmaids. Please welcome Kristen Wiig and Wendy McClendon Covey. Yeah.
Did you bump traffic for us?
Yeah.
Yes. Oh, that was the right decision.
It's gone, man.
You guys rate.
Thanks for being here, ladies.
Thanks for having us.
Wonderful to have you here. We have oftentimes had a discussion about Bridesmaids on the air just because it can either be, you know, a great honor for somebody.
Right.
Or a colossal pain in the ass.
Also right.
It's usually that.
It is usually that.
Yeah.
Have you ladies stepped in those shoes before making this movie? Have you been bridesmaids?
We've stepped in it. Oh, yeah.
Many times.
Stepped in many dyed to match pumps. And, it is a colossal pain in the ass, like you said.
It seems to me that the selection process, either you're traditionally, I guess, supposed to pick your best friend, but it seems a lot of times the decision is made for, as far as the bridesmaid, you pick the person who you think can handle your insane friends is the way it plays out.
Or who can afford to do it.
Right.
Yeah, it's expensive.
Yeah.
You know, it's thousands of dollars now to be a bridesmaid.
It really is.
Yeah.
And you all have to pay equal amounts.
Right.
Well,
there's a scene where you're looking through the list of things, and is that off an actual etiquette, wedding etiquette list, or?
Well, I mean, we had a little fun. We made it a little longer.
If you go online, you can find these insane lists of, you know, you must put liquid paper on the bride's dress if she gets a stain on it. You must be charming to the mother of the bride. You must help grandma to her chair. It's like, what?
Right, right.
Yeah. I don't want to do any of these things.
And in a way, I guess what you have is the dynamic of you're all friends centered around the bride, but you may not be friends outside of that.
Oh, yeah. A lot of times you're meeting them
for the first time.
But they're very good friends with your good friend, but you don't know them. So sometimes, you know, it's like that thing when you get all your friends from different parts of your life in one room. You're kind of like, oh, my God.
And they don't get along.
They don't gel.
Right? They don't get along, but you want them to, and it puts pressure on you.
And I guess the bridesmaid job is to sort of pull that off the bride. She doesn't have to worry about that.
Right.
But you have a great supporting cast.
Yes.
Everyone in this is just what I love seeing you, Kristen, in the obviously, they're the over-the-top characters that you do, but when you are the sort of every woman, you really are phenomenal at that.
Thank you.
And do you like playing that role more? Because it's more nuanced, you know?
I mean, I always say they're two different muscles.
Right,
I mean,
yeah.
It's like they both are, you know, creatively fulfilling. I mean, not really one more than the other, but I mean, on SNL, of course, it's so much fun to get to go crazy and, you know, act like an idiot and wear wigs and stuff, but movies, it's a different thing, but I love it.
But even in this movie, I thought you sort of played
an idiot.
No.
You were quite the idiot.
You played a bunch of different types of characters.
Yeah.
As the movie sort of progresses, your character becomes more and more depressed.
True.
So,
it's a comedy, people. It doesn't sound
funny. Your depression is funny. I mean, like, as you sort of, you know, slip into this, you know, this madness, it just gets really, really funny. So, I think, you know, in a sense, you had to play a bunch of different characters.
That's true.
Yeah. And you know what I really liked about this movie is I didn't know how beautiful Milwaukee was. I had no idea. And then they're showing all these you know, aerial views of the city. I had no idea.
Was it actually shot in Milwaukee?
Milwaukee, California.
Exteriors.
I'm sure the exteriors.
The exteriors were yes, okay. Yes.
And you had talked about the supporting cast and the actress that really stood out in this movie was Melissa McCarthy, who's from Mike and Molly.
She is, yes. I mean, all the ladies are just like unbelievable.
Yeah.
And when they talk about going to the Fight Club for a bachelorette party, that's the best. Because you know when that happens.
That's a terrible idea.
What you want to do for the bachelorette or for the shower or whatever is always a fight among everyone who's involved in the bridal party.
Right. And like Wendy's character, Rita, I mean, she's pretty determined that the bachelorette party is going to change her life.
Yeah.
Because
the life isn't through the rest of my marriage.
Right. Because it hasn't been good.
Party.
Right.
No.
Yeah.
Well, it's because I made it bad.
Yeah.
You know.
I want to ask Wendy and Kristen both about playing drunk and playing drunk funny, because being drunk and out with friends is amusing to one and another, but like it doesn't necessarily translate well to film. You know, it's not
true.
Always amusing to everybody else in the room. How do you do drunk funny when you're doing a movie?
You drink. You really drink.
Do you drink? Exactly. It's complete inebriation helps with you.
I mean, can you drink? Can you have a cocktail before you do the scene, or is that just throw you off?
That would probably
you should
throw me
never
off.
Do that out of respect for everybody that's around you and all the money they're spending.
Right.
But you know what? The funny thing is that when people are really drunk, what do they try to do? Act like they're not drunk.
Right. Yeah.
So that's the way to do it properly is to act like
you're
you
trying
know,
to keep
hey,
it together.
I'm fine.
Yeah.
I am fine.
What I like about this, and there's a lot of movies that are now. I was watching Jane Curtin. She was talking on Oprah about how Belushi used to sabotage all the female writers and all this stuff. And now I think we're finally coming into an age where you could take a movie like this and base it, you know, focus on the women, and the guys are going to be attracted to it too because it has. It's something that we learned a long time ago. You can get a little gross. You can get a little scatological. Yeah. And women have the same reaction to it. They love it. And, right. you know, we always get that.
Yeah. I mean, it's 2011. It's
right. Yeah.
It's time.
Yeah.
You know,
I mean,
and in real life,
yeah.
women are pretty disgusting.
I mean, you know? We get yeah. more
on,
disgusting
ladies,
stories.
Back me up.
Yeah,
back
you're right.
Me up. I'm not the only one that's disgusting.
Believe me,
it's true.
Every lady is nodding her head now.
I've cleaned bathrooms, and the women's bathroom is always way worse.
There it is. There it is.
That's not what we meant.
But you know what? This movie is definitely not a chick flick, so I don't want you know people to think, oh, it's Bridesmaids. It's, you know, let's get the girls together and go. No, this is for everybody.
Yes, thank you for saying that.
It's
you're
true.
Welcome.
Yeah, yeah, thank you.
Do you like the, it's been labeled the hangover for women, but it's not, I think it seems to be much more than that.
Yeah, it is getting that a lot, yeah. for sure, which, I mean, obviously it's a great movie to be compared to. I
yeah.
only hope we're as successful as that movie. I mean, I do think ultimately it's different, and I mean, you guys saw it, did you think?
Casey saw it, and
yeah.
It was
definitely,
he was raving on it.
Well, I went, you know, what I think will get guys into the movie theaters is the hope of that. But after watching,
well, then it is.
Yeah,
there it is.
Maybe. Well, that's why I want to say it's not a chick flick. But it's also it's not The Hangover as well.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm married. I've been in a lot of weddings, and so is my wife. So there is so much material there.
It's universal.
Just, it really is. I think it's something that everybody can relate to.
Because this is the thing. The shows like Bridezilla and so on and so forth, they all focus in on this dynamic that exists only around this event in someone's life.
And really, I think it also sort of peels back the curtain of like, all right, what do women really talk about?
Right.
I mean, there's a thing there when you guys are talking about the bachelorette party, and you say, and I hope I'm not ruining this for people. Be like, I want balls in my face.
Yeah. She's determined. Yeah. She's determined.
Is you, Wendy, your character?
Well, my character wants it.
Just
in general?
Hey, when a guy makes a movie that's like this, you know, sort of a fun, tongue-in-cheek, silly comedy, a guy will toss in some boobs for fun.
You mean actual boobs or just...
Yeah, talk? Yeah, yes. Like up on screen. Like, you know, if you're going to make an airplane, for example, you want to, just for no apparent reason, a topless woman running across the screen.
Right.
Do women have that same mentality at all?
No.
Okay.
I would like to see a guy, when we see John Hamm without his shirt, ladies, rush to the theaters now. that's okay. That's a lights out thing.
That's
right.
More for guys.
That's more for guys.
Okay.
I had such a poignant point to make, and it escaped me. Go on, Kristen.
There's a little boy in a hospital who wants this movie to succeed.
Oh, you get to see Kristen in a bra.
Oh!
That's fun for the guys.
Wow.
Well, I'm Kristen's pimp.
In fact, the opening scene is Kristen
wild.
In a bra doing calisthenics with John Hamm.
Yeah,
really?
Why not?
Why not?
Well, you know,
it's what the people want to see.
We have commented you. Well, you're both. You know, I mean, it used to be the longstanding thing that women in comedy were unattractive, and you guys are bucking that system tremendously.
Yes.
And Kristen, the first time I saw you when you joined SNL was the two a-holes sketch.
Yes.
And it was at that point when, because you so savagely nailed that person. And I think that probably, and correct me if I'm wrong, a lot of the comedy that you both do, because you're improvisationally, I guess, based, is when you latch onto something, is it very much out of anger or you just can't, I got to do something about this?
No, actually, never anger.
Really?
No, never.
Because you just totally eviscerated that type of person perfectly.
Well, maybe on some, Jason Sudeikis and I wrote that. The writing night at SNL is from the old days. I mean, you come in at 3 or 4 in the afternoon and you stay until 8 in the morning, which you could come in early in the morning, but we don't do that. So I remember Jason and I wrote that sketch. It was like 5:30 in the morning. We didn't want to be there. We were tired. We were chewing gum to stay awake.
Right.
So I think maybe we were a little like, oh, what are we going to do? So maybe we just turned into those people. But that's kind of where that came from.
The little aside, when you look at the person and you see the guy, you look like a rabbit. Yeah. It's just so simple, but it just killed me because that's exactly that kind of stuff. You both are from the Groundlings?
Yes. Yep. Yes. That's where we met.
How many people have come out of that group? Because it's just
a lot,
all over the place.
And a lot of them are in this movie.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. A lot of people from SNL as well.
And Judd Apatow is producing? Yes.
Yes, yes.
So when you talk about the difference between like a Hangover and this movie, Apatow stuff can be uproariously funny, but always has a good heart.
He's so good at that. And it makes the funny funnier.
Yeah.
If you care about the people and then, you know, 20 minutes later you have a scene where you're actually like really engaged with the characters. I think that
right. Yeah, if it's helps. Completely outlandish, then you really don't emotionally attach at any point.
Right.
So he does a really good job.
He's amazing at that.
If you're just tuning in, Kristen Wiig and Wendy McClendon cover you here. Bridesmaids is going to be in theaters on May 13th. Kristen, I have to admit, I got a little crush on you from Whippet.
Really?
Yeah. Oh, I thought you were adorable in that movie.
Thank you.
And also from the outtakes, too. It looked like you guys, I think that chicks have more fun. You know what I mean?
They do. Well, that's why we do the ladies' nights.
Yeah, we take women, rather than a group of guys, we take a group of women to a strip club,
and
like where women get naked.
And that's why you do it?
That's part of it. Yeah. But it's a blast, man. It's so much fun. And in the outtakes of that movie, it looked like you guys were just partying, like having a great time.
I've been very blessed to perform with amazing women for most of my, starting at the Groundlings. I mean, that's really where I learned how to be in an ensemble, and I was so lucky to have the women, you know, above me in the Groundlings, like Wendy and Melissa and Maya. I don't know what my point is.
No. I mean, does that teach you? Because obviously, the filmmaking is a different thing. You co-wrote the script, Kristen. So when you're doing that, and you have somebody who's a very competent script writer. Do you, as the writer, allow improvisation, or it's like, geez, I kind of wrote it this way to be this way?
Absolutely. We were not precious about anything.
Okay.
Plus, we hired these ladies because they're so funny, and especially with Wendy, I got to say, like, there were scenes where she was just going off, and we were like, just forget what we wrote, just keep talking.
I love that.
I mean, she's, you know, one of the best.
Well, the Reno 911 stuff is great. Is that completely done?
Oh,
done,
yeah.
Done.
Oh yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. It's been done.
Well, I got a crush on you then, and then.
Keep going.
And then
keep
I'm
going.
Reading that your favorite band is my second favorite band, Steely Dan. I love Steely Dan.
You've opened that can of worms.
Right?
The only other time I've been here to Philadelphia was to go to see Steely Dan at the Tower Theater.
Great theater, too. Yeah.
I contend that there is not one single bad Steely Dan song.
I would agree.
Yeah.
I would agree.
The one that's not even that good is awesome.
Yeah.
Which one?
Showbiz Kids.
Oh, I thought you were going to say East St. Louis Toodaloo.
Oh, yeah.
No, I love that.
It's a little out there.
I want to say I hate Steely Dan right now just to stir up controversy.
Just to make really it interesting.
No, I don't.
You're contrarian.
I'm kidding, everybody.
No, I got
Philadelphia, calm down.
I got to meet Donald Fagen and Walter Becker backstage at that show.
How ugly.
And I had nothing to say.
What do you say?
Interesting to say.
What did you say?
Oh, I don't even want to tell you.
I want balls in my face.
Come on now.
Yeah, they used to do the New York Rock and Soul Review. Do you remember Fagan was doing that? And there was a not to go off on a Steely Dan tangent, but Becker joined them one night, and it was amazing. So
crazy. Oh, stop it. I'm sorry, I got to throw down a little bit.
Kristen, I was doing a little research on you, and you were on a show that I loved that was sort of a one-and-done deal, the Joe Schmo show.
Oh, wasn't that great?
That was basically
like another life ago.
A huge practical joke on one dude who thought he was in a reality show.
Right.
Yeah. And were a lot of those people involved with that with the Groundlings as well?
Steve Mallory.
Oh, he was in the second one. They did it again.
After you do it once, isn't your hand tipped on that?
Well, I mean, I guess as long as there's reality shows, you don't know if it really is one.
I guess.
Not.
Yeah, and I guess that's true. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, ultimately, you know, he got a big chunk of change, and yeah, he was all right.
Wasn't
but
that heartbreaking
horrible.
when he found out?
Oh my
that
god!
That
yeah.
was a
we
sham.
Were all like, did we just do like, something oh, really no. bad? Yeah. But then we were like, oh, but you went. I think he won like $100,000 or something. Then he was like, oh, I'm fine.
He almost had like a nervous breakdown. Oh, yeah.
He was going to have a stroke.
Yeah.
Wow. Well, ladies, we would love to spend the rest of the day telling you how cute and talented you
and
are.
And we'd love to.
Oh, shoot. We
know
stop?
You're busy Hollywood types and you got your stuff to do. But we are glad that you had a few minutes to come by here.
Thanks for having us. This was fun.
It's our pleasure. We'd love to have you back again sometime. What is this? This is East St. Louis.
East St. Louis, yeah.
Oh, I thought we were going
to... Great song.
It's a great song.
All right, but we gotta end with something appropriate.
All right, here
so
we
move,
go.
Move down one.
Moving down
oh,
one.
Jesus, stop it.
There
here
you
we go.
Go.
This is what we need to play here.
Oh,
that's what we need to end with. Thank you, ladies.
Thank
wonderful
you.
To have you by here this morning. Kristen Wiig and Wendy McClendon
yeah.
coming.
Yeah.
Thanks, you guys.
On
thank
the
you.
Preston and Steve shows.
Preston and Steve on 93.3 WMMR.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top five Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.